So I was looking at this video today of this dude jumping this cliff in his bike. Like Jamie was showing this one guy who does this on buildings. He does it like he rides his bike on like the ledges of buildings and shit and jumps from building to building. And I was watching this other guy jump this cliff with his bike, like literally like jumps over one side of the cliff and lands onto the other. It's fucking like you're watching the whole thing. You're going, Jesus Christ, if he falls, he's dead. He's fucking dead. That shit's totally legal, right? Like we were talking about people thinking that MMA is barbaric, that it should be illegal. Like where should be you'd be allowed to take your risks? Look at this fucking guy. This guy's crazy, dude. Look at this shit. Hopping from building to building. I mean, he's riding a bike on the edges of these buildings. This is fucking insane. I mean, this guy's got just ridiculous control with his bicycle. I mean, should this be legal? I don't know. Seems like he's doing okay. Seems fine. But if he fucks up, like, you know about that Chinese dude that just died?
No.
He was one of those YouTube guys who would take videos of him on top of skyscrapers and shit.
He fell.
He fell to his death.
Damn.
Yeah, dude, it looks ugly, too. It looks scary. Like he was trying to claw himself up, and he couldn't. And you see his hand slip, and you realize that's a wrap, son.
Oh.
600 feet.
I had a friend who was training to be a base jumper, and there's like things you got to do. You know, so many regular skydiving jumps. You gotta master skydiving and just that before you get into, and then there's things you have to do. There's like a list, and halfway through, too many people died in the scene, or this person just stepped back and said, you know what, maybe, because it's not that uncommon where these crazy base jumpers die or almost die, right?
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of videos. There's one I saw that was awful. This Russian guy jumps off the top of this building and his parachute doesn't open up in time. And he bounces off the ground and you hear him screaming.
Oh.
And you just go, ooh.
How about that one guy? What do they call that? Ooh. They don't call it base jumping, but they're like flying squirrels. What is that?
What's
that?
My friend Andy's the world record holder. Andy Stumps, the world record holder. He flew, 18 miles? I think he covered 18 miles.
What's that
miles.
Called? Is it? It's a
flying wingsuit.
Yeah. But there's one guy that's super famous for doing it, too, and he was supposed to go through, you know, they go down canyons, and he went between two rocks, and, like, his leg clipped one of the, and then it, like, fucked him. He didn't die, though, which is crazy.
Well, you know the one guy that did die on the Golden Gate Bridge? Did you ever see that one?
Mm-mm.
He slammed right into the bridge while people were watching him. He was supposed to go between the wires.
Oh, shit.
And he hit the bridge.
Like he jumped off a plane?
Crazier. Like, he hit it like a bullet.
No, but he jumped off a plane and then went flying down and tried to go through the
I don't know where
bridge.
He jumped off of. I don't know if he jumped off of a plane or he jumped off of another bridge. I don't know what he did. But when he was trying to do it, he literally slammed right into the bridge. And it sounds like a crazy car accident. Like, bang!
How long ago was that?
No. A few years back. This is
it.
Oh,
shit.
You want to hear it? Give us some volume, Jamie.
Yeah, it wasn't Golden Gate, but
San Francisco, which bridge was it? It's horrible, dude.
Oh, shit. Who's that in the parachute?
That's another guy. He was flying with another guy.
Oh, my God.
Oh, shit.
Dude, fuck.
It sounded like there was a bunch of people there watching, too.
There were, too. But is that, should you be allowed to do that? I don't think you should be able to tell someone they can't do something. Right? Why should you be able to? Why?
What if they just start influencing so many young kids to do it and there's all these kids dying all over the place? Oof. Then do you make it illegal?
Oh, man, that's a good question. Well, then do you make war illegal?
You can't do that.
Right.
How are we supposed to eat?
Like what sport, when does it become too dangerous? Like a what? Like soccer people, apparently, some of them get brain damage from heading the ball. Apparently, you're not supposed to head things like that. And they do it all the time in practice. They start developing traumatic brain injuries. They get CTE from headbutting a ball. It's weird. So that may be more dangerous than wrestling.
Yep.
You know?
But there's no way. I mean, people talk about trying to make it illegal because it's barbaric. There's no way you're going to make MMA illegal. It's too late for that shit.
I think so, too. But it's interesting when people start rallying for more regulation for people's behavior. It's voluntary behavior.
What's the latest? Is there some new thing?
No, I just read some article. It was just something on MMA being barbaric. And I'm like, yeah, it is. It's a lot of things are. You know, we like a lot of things that are fucking super dangerous. But there's something about, like, agreed upon violence. Like, you train for 6 weeks, he trains for 6 weeks, you both get into a cage together, and we all watch it, like, screaming monkeys.
Well, we know that in football, some guys get Lou Gehrig's disease, right?
Sure.
I mean, Steve Smith, remember the guy from the Raiders? He was on an HBO special.
Mm-hmm. They get all kinds of brain issues.
Has that happened in MMA?
Not like that, I don't think. Not yet, but you got to think of the long history of football. With football, you're dealing with guys who played in the 50s and the 60s, right?
Yeah, this guy played on the Raiders like in the early 90s, or Steve Smith, I think, was his
name. Well, we have a few guys like that, right? We have Gary Goodrich, who fought in the UFC in 93 or 94, remember?
But he doesn't have Lou Gehrig's.
No, but he's got some serious CTE. He's been real open about it, does a lot of interviews about it, is on a bunch of medication. He said actually the real damage came when he started doing K1.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, he started kickboxing. Yeah. He started kickboxing, but, you know, Big Daddy.
Can't be surprised, though. I mean.
No, Big Daddy was in some fucking wars. Remember he got head kicked by Gilbert
Ivel? I don't mean about Gary Goodrich. I mean about everybody. Like,
oh, no,
the fact that
anybody,
you don't have. If you fight for 10 years and you don't come out with some significant brain damage, you're fucking lucky. You're in a sport where your brain is the target. Everyone's trying to figure out ways. They're lifting weights. They're doing kettlebells so that they could hit your brain even harder. They're learning technique so that it's perfect, so that when it hits your fucking brain, it just knocks you the fuck out.
That is crazy.
That's the sport.
That is the sport.
So no one should be surprised.
You can't be. But you can't be surprised. Like, you know, what was that guy's name? Tony Conigliaro? Is that what the guy that got hit with a baseball? The guy got hit with a pitch when I was in high school, I think, in Boston. I still liked baseball. Like, you know, I found Taekwondo because of baseball. Went to a baseball game and passed by the Taekwondo studio because the line for the T was really long to get on the public transportation. So he said, let's just go up there and watch. And so we walked up the stairs, and this guy, John Lee, who's a U.S. national light heavyweight champion, was kicking the bag. And he was kicking the back so hard, I was like, holy shit, I want to figure out how to do that.
That's a movie right there. That's like,
dude, I was walking up the stairs and I heard, whoomp, ka-chink, whoomp, ka-chink. And the ka-chink was the chains of the bag, just chink, because he had this 150-pound bag flying through the air. Dude, I came up and I watched him kick that thing, and I was like, I got to learn how to do that. Like, that is crazy. How the fuck could he do that? But the guy who was famous in Boston from when I remember when I was in high school was this guy, Tony C. Tony Conigliaro, and he was hit with a pitch and became, like, you know, disabled. He got hit in the head in 1967, I guess. There it goes. A Revere native, was a rising star with the Red Sox. So I'm way later than this, so I must have been just hearing everybody talk about it. But, you know, that can happen.
Your story about the first time, you know, considering how extraordinary your sidekicks are, that story is just so strong. It's like, where did that shit come from?
It came from the my instruction, for sure.
Like, yeah,
the
didn't way he I was tell taught, you? Like, yeah. But that story, how crazy that story? You're going to a baseball game and you hear these cluck cluck, or you end up going to a Taekwondo school because of why? Why didn't you go to the baseball game again?
Well, we went to the baseball game. We were on our way home.
Okay, yeah, on your way home.
You know, everybody leaves the Fenway Park, so the line for the train was fucking huge. So everybody's getting on the T. So we were kids. You know,
you guys just hanging out?
I couldn't drive back then. I was like 14, almost 15.
You see this Taekwondo school?
Yeah, I knew it was there because I had always looked at martial arts schools because I wanted to go to one for a long time, but I looked at them from the yellow pages, like, who has the biggest ad? That must be if they had a big ad in the yellow pages, I was like, oh, that must be the spot, man. That's gotta be the spot.
When I was a kid, right next to our neighborhood McDonald's was a karate studio, and man, I was as poor can be. I mean, we didn't have any money, so But on Fridays, when my mom would get paid, we'd go to McDonald's. That was like we're celebrating. Thank God it's Friday. She got a $150 check. She's taking her kids to McDonald's. And every time we went to McDonald's, I'd always look over at that karate studio and just think, man, I wish I was rich. Jesus, I just wanted to do karate. I remember one time it was just like a scary studio, and it looked cool. It was in Santa Ana on Bristol and 17th, right there. It may still be there. I drove by the other day. Didn't drive by that.
Dude, tell a story about how your instructor pretended he went to China.
Tell the story.
I don't want to bust him out. This podcast is too big for that. Okay. Can I do it without saying his name?
Oh, yeah. Don't say his name.
No, I don't want to say his name.
Don't say his name.
You know, I don't want to bring it
okay,
up.
Okay, we don't have to bring it up. Whatever. Hey, man, back in the day, that's what people did. You know, there's a lot of guys that got by with some fake martial arts. They really did. There was a lot of fake stuff out there. And that's why I think to this day, like if I hadn't walked up those stairs, I could have went to some bullshit school. I took karate for like one lesson or maybe two at the most before that at Joe Esposito's Karate Academy, which is a really good spot. It was in my city too, but there was no good public transportation methods to get there.
It was too hard to get there.
It's too hard to get there.
And you're 13, 14?
Yeah, I was 14. So then a year later is when I wind up walking up those stairs and hearing that bag going, ka-ching.
That's a movie right there. Dude. That's a cartoon, definitely.
Not only that, he was training for the world championships. He was training. He was a national champion at the time. And he was training for the World Cup where he took bronze. So he was like top of his game. This guy, John Lee, he taught me a lot of shit, too. He taught me a lot.
White guy?
Black guy. Big, tall, thin black guy who wound up having a substance abuse problem. He was a national taekwondo champion. He was a bad motherfucker, dude. He kicked so hard.
But he wasn't the head instructor at the school.
There was a Korean dude. And an American dude named Michael O'Malley who spent the most time with me.
Who was the main instructor? The Korean guy?
Jae-hun Kim, the Korean guy. He was trained by General Chae-Yung-Yi, who's the founder of Taekwondo in Korea.
Shit.
So he was like one of a very small elite group.
He was like Henzo Gracie.
In a way, yeah. But what the difference is, they emphasized a power style. Whereas as it got more and more competitive, guys realized with that chest protector on, the best style for scoring is like really quick kicks that don't have as much power, but you score and you win tournaments like that. And so the game changed and the kicks changed because like to throw a kick that's hard, you have to plant yourself and it does take a little bit more time.
So it's better to spend more time on just getting points.
Yeah, in a lot of the Taekwondo tournaments, because those guys were really good, and they knew how to play that game so well. They were so fast with their legs, but they would just touch you. They would just slap, 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 slap. And some guys would kick harder than others, but the whole hard style of the early Taekwondo was kind of missing in a lot of their approaches, because they were just trying to win. And if you really like dug in and try to kick hard, a lot of times those guys would outscore you. You know, you're dealing with like really fast, really skillful guys. But then when you apply that to fighting, the real problem is, like, in fighting, you have to land hard shit because people are not just going to play Taekwondo with you. They're going to try to take you down. They're going to try to kick your legs. They're going to try to do a bunch of shit. So all that flippy-flippy shit, you got to make a hard transition. Whereas, like, Muay Thai guys, they're fucking digging. Everything's digging. They're fucking driving into everything. Everything they're trying to blast you with. You know, they're doing it skillfully, but there's emphasis on power through the whole thing. So when they would fight, if a Taekwondo guy fought a Muay Thai guy, and it's happened many times, the Taekwondo guys are fucked. They're fucked. They just get their legs kicked out from under them.
It's like
they just can't last.
It's the same thing with leg locks in jiu-jitsu.
Yeah,
it's the same thing.
It is. Yeah, it's attacking the leg.
Because when everything is legal in jiu-jitsu, when everything's legal, man, legs become like the most important thing. Because you don't have to sweep. You know, if chokes are the most important thing, you got to do a lot of shit before you got to pass this guy's. First, you got to sweep him. Then you got to pass his guard. Then you got to get his back. You got to do so much shit before you can get to his neck. A lot of the times, most of the times, with leg locks, you don't need to do any of that shit. You just need to jump right on them.
Yeah.
They're right there. You don't ever need to sweep anybody. You don't ever need to pass anybody's guard. You could just go legs 100% and roll with a pure jiu-jitsu guy and wreck him. You could do that.
Yeah.
That happens all the time.
Yeah.
The leg game. when everything is legal, the leg game, that's the first fight. That's the first fight. You have to deal, whether you like it or not, you have to deal with it. If you want the neck, okay, you're going to have to deal with this leg war right now. Because you can't get to the neck unless you could deal with that. You're going to go around the forest, the leg locks, or you're going to go fucking right through. Yeah. You know, so, but you take leg locks out of the game, make them illegal, then it becomes a whole different sport. It's totally different. So it's exactly what you're talking about with the power shots and the point shots.
Yeah, it's exactly what we're talking about, where like the style of MMA now is almost always attacking the legs. Everybody attacks the legs. Did you see Dos Anjos Lawler?
Hell yeah.
Woo!
Hell yeah. That was...
Dos Anjos is for real at 170, man. Yeah. He's for real. Yeah.
His striking's better than ever.
Who the fuck ever did that to Robbie Lawler? Mm-hmm. Who just... outclassed Robbie Lawler. Who the fuck did that? Nobody ever did that. His endurance, Robbie Lawler
never really at the end he kind of showed that his legs were done right at the very end. He was kind of wobbling.
He's a fucking animal. He took it the whole way. I mean, you could see by the visibly, giant swelling.
Can you see it by was he kind of like stumbling?
He wasn't moving well, and he was definitely more stationary. Yeah. I mean, he was just taking out his leg. And that low leg kick, isn't it crazy? I was just talking to somebody about that.
That more people don't strategize to use that leg to wear down the legs. You would think in so many fights, it's never like one of the main strategies.
I think that low leg kick is changing the game. I really do. Remember when Stipe fought Junior and his leg swole up like a fucking balloon, like almost immediately? Uriah Faber fought Jimmy Rivera. Jimmy Rivera fucked him up.
Isn't
with that
it
lower
weird that
leg
more,
kick?
More people don't focus on that?
I think they're doing it more and more now, man. I think, but it's what's crazy is it's pretty recent. I credit it to Benson Henderson. Henderson was like the first guy I ever saw do it. He started doing it like really regularly. And I was like, like at a, like really high level guys, like world championship level guys, Benson Henderson was the first guy to do it. I was like, oh, I like that. And I talked to Duke Rufus about it. He's like, it's the
worst. Just taking the legs out?
No, lower leg kicks. Lower, like hitting the shins.
Oh.
Everybody, they're attacking the inside of your leg, like in your calf, your lower calf and the outside. Devastating. It fucks the nerves up. Like, your legs give out. Did you see Uriah's fight with Jimmy Rivera? Rivera just constantly chopped at that leg, and Uriah's leg became, like, almost useless. He can't walk on it.
I was just talking about straight leg kicks, too. Yeah.
That, too, for sure.
Just the regular old kick right above the knee.
Yeah.
Right, you know?
Well, you know what? Here's another thing, too, man. Those Bruce Lee kicks. Those oblique kicks that a lot of guys are using. Mm-hmm. You know, those are fucking legit, man. They blow your knees out. I mean, they slam into your thigh and they blow your fucking knees out. And, you know, a lot of people don't like it. They think it's nasty. But look, you're trying to kill each other with your bones. Like,
yeah, that's
getting your knee blown out.
Why that would come up when dudes are trying to do like flying knees, like those Dos Anjos, double flying knees. Or what do you call those? A skip knees or flying
knee? Yeah.
He goes, he uses that first knee to propel that second knee. Bam. Yep.
He also does it twice. You have to block that first knee. You got to react to that first knee, and it helps the second knee get in there.
Yeah.
You see that knee coming at you, you're gonna react, and that second knee's in.
That should be something that you'd see way more often.
Yeah.
That should be if you're trying to get in the UFC and you're not adding as many different weapons, you can't add them all at once. So you take the most important ones.
Yeah.
You know, your 1-2 and your leg kick and maybe a head kick, and then you slowly, obviously, you would just add them. But you should be, if you're making a living in the UFC or that's your goal, you should be always working on adding a new strike to the mix, new something that you master, something on this camp we're going to focus. You got to always be
adding. It's just
adding.
So hard to get really good at one thing while you're doing everything. You know,
you got to focus on the basics and then have 20 minutes a week where you're just working on, and over time. Time will fly, and if you spend 20 minutes a week on a new technique, within 6 months, it's going to be something that you've mastered, maybe a year. If you're consistent with it, you could just keep doing that. You could just keep adding another one, especially with all that's available with striking. It seems like the days of just going out there boxing and throwing a leg kick every now and then, like that's only going to get you doesn't seem like it would be the smart thing to do to not constantly add weapons.
I 100% agree with you. And I always say, like, boil it down to what's the best in each genre. And arguably one of the best striking arts, if not the best, is Thai boxing, right? Muay Thai. You don't see anybody just winning Muay Thai with boxing. They don't just go over there and just box. Fucking nobody does that. They go over there and you tie box.
Yeah.
They kicked each other. They elbow. They use the clinch. They throw elbows. They're not trying to like do a Mike Tyson in there. They get their legs chopped out from under them.
Yeah.
If both guys know how to box, the guy who knows how to box and kick your legs is going to have a big advantage.
Yes.
I mean, it's just I don't think there's hardly anybody that's going over to Thailand and just trying to box Muay Thai fighters. It's a terrible idea.
And there's so much more to that, is what I'm saying. The turn inside kicks, all that
wheel kicks.
If you're really good at just really good, it's so good that your training camp has to address it and use valuable time to address and train against that, you already got him off balance.
Yeah.
Like when I was in George Sotiropoulos' corner when he fought Dennis Seaver. That was a part of the training camp. We had a deal with Dennis Seaver's turning sidekick.
Mm-hmm.
He was laying people out with that turning sidekick. He's done it. It's still to this day, if he can still throw it, and if he lands it, you're probably going to get knocked out. He's probably one of the best. So that throws your opponent's game off. He's got to constantly worry about that instead of not having to worry about that. If like Dennis Seaver had all the rest of his skills, but you just deleted that turning sidekick, then you wouldn't really have to focus on that much.
Yeah.
You know, you could focus more on yourself and your game plan and how you're going to impose your game plan. Like, fuck really what he's doing. But when you have something real dangerous like that, like with Edson Barboza, he's got that turning, that spinning wheel kick that he's knocked out a few people with, right? At least two?
He's the first wheel kick knockout ever in the UFC.
How many does he have? At least two or three, right?
A couple. I don't know. He's the first guy ever in the UFC also that has two stoppages by leg kicks.
Yeah. That throws your whole game off. When you got to worry about him throwing some grand slam strike at you.
His kicks are so scary. He's the fastest kicker I've ever seen as far as his switch kick. Yeah. I've never seen a guy throw a switch kick like Edson Barboza. It just gets in there so fast. You're like, what the fuck, man?
Yeah.
Yeah, that he's fighting Nurmagomedov. Holy shit. Holy shit.
That's going to be a crazy
one. December 30th. You should come.
That's going to be a crazy one.
You should come to that one.
Vegas?
Come see that shit live.
It's a tough one.
It's a tough one.
When you got a family, it's
I hear
like,
you, bro.
It's you can't just go, hey, I'm going to go to Vegas with my buddies. You know, it's a different life, you know?
That fight is...
And I love it. Yeah, I don't. If I never go to Vegas ever again, I wouldn't give a fuck.
You know,
I don't. I've been so much that I'm good for the rest of my life. Seriously, I really am.
I think you'd want to go back every now and again just to feel it when you feel that.
We're going to do an EBI in Vegas, a May 5th in Vegas.
And is it May 5th before the UFC?
No, it's on a Saturday night.
Oh.
I don't know if there's not a UFC on the same date, but it's going to be. We're going to have a. A combat jiu-jitsu match between Gordon Ryan and Vinny Magalhaes.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That's crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
Dude.
We don't normally do super fights in EBI because I take all the purse money that we have available in our budget and we put it towards the winner. The winner take all in the tournament. We don't have extra money for additional super fights. But this one, we had to figure out a way to make it happen. It's going to be nuts, dude. Gordon Ryan against Vinny Magalhaes in combat jiu-jitsu.
Combat jiu-jitsu might be the next big thing. It really could be the next big thing. Because it's, as far as like preparation, jiu-jitsu preparation for MMA, without kicking and punching and kneeing standing up, it's the best preparation.
Yeah, for sure. There's a bunch of different ways to look at it. An MMA purist might say, what the fuck is this combat jiu-jitsu with slaps? We'll just watch MMA. Like, what's the point? You know, people can say that easily, but the way I look at it, it's nothing is as good as the UFC. That's the best. There's nothing better than the UFC. But there are jiu-jitsu fanatics that they just want to see jiu-jitsu in the UFC. They're really not that into a kickboxing match. If, you know, Junior Dos Santos fights Cain Velasquez and it's a kickboxing match, great. That would be an all-time great match to watch. But there's a group of jiu-jitsu fanatics that they're just – that's
right.
They just want to watch the jiu-jitsu, but with the strikes. And that's the only, and MMA is the only place where you could watch MMA jiu-jitsu. It's a totally different style. When you watch just pure jiu-jitsu, that's not MMA jiu-jitsu. That has nothing to do with MMA jiu-jitsu.
Well, what people don't understand is if people that don't do jiu-jitsu that are listening to this, like, what are they talking about? There's places where you're going for a submission, but someone could easily hit you in your face. and it makes the move kind of unrealistic. There's a lot of times where guys do unrealistic things, and really you could just be smacking them in the face, and they would have to stop and protect themselves.
Yeah. When you're doing jiu-jitsu without strikes, it's just pure jiu-jitsu, you get into a lot of positions that that would be dangerous in, if strikes were allowed. So, which is fine. You know, jiu-jitsu, I love submission-only jiu-jitsu. You know,
I do, too. And it's just a different thing. It's just you need to understand what it is. I mean, this doesn't mean that you shouldn't do that move if it's that's the most effective move in that rule set.
Yeah.
But there's a beautiful place for combat jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, because now we could watch jiu-jitsu fanatics. It's just for jiu-jitsu freaks. We could watch MMA jiu-jitsu, and it's just pure MMA jiu-jitsu. Yeah. We don't have to sit through the striking. Because we, in MMA... If the fight gets boring on the ground, we have stand-ups. In combat jiu-jitsu, after 2 minutes standing, we have get-downs. We get them down, just like in wrestling.
Yeah.
You get them down. It's like after 2 minutes, no one, because if we had a 10-minute or 15-minute combat jiu-jitsu match and they were just standing and wrestling the whole time, that match is shit. It's garbage.
Yeah.
That match, nobody wants to see that.
Nobody
Two dudes just wrestle, trying to wrestle for 10 minutes. So after 2 minutes, as horn sounds, a coin gets tossed, and if you win the coin toss, you get to decide top or bottom. And we start in sit up guard, like butterfly guard with double underhooks. You get top or bottom in that position.
Wow.
And then we start right there. And then if they stand up again, 2 minute clock.
So that's a new thing.
Two minute get down clock. Yeah.
When did that start?
We did that.
I like it.
We did that right at Combat Jiu-Jitsu Worlds about a month ago. Because that would ruin the show. I constantly am thinking of ways to ruin the show. Like, how can I ruin it? Of course, if they just stand up and wrestle the whole time. And that's going to happen in Combat Jiu-Jitsu. They're not going to pull guard as much as in sub-only. People are pulling guard like all over the place. It's like people are just tumbling, and then there's no strikes, and they're all over each other's legs, and they're just pulling guard and flipping and doing all this stuff that when their strikes... When there's strikes, boom, we get into full guard now.
Yeah.
And we get, the mount becomes very important. Mount is, you could win a million EBIs and never mount a guy. You know, you could just be a leg lock fanatic. Mm-hmm. You could, you don't have, like, full guard.
Was it Wagner Rocha and Nathan Orchard?
Yes. That was Combat Jiu-Jitsu Worlds 1, the winner of the lightweight bracket was Wagner Rocha. He beat Nathan Orchard in the finals.
Was he the only guy to stop somebody?
That was the first TKO. Yes, he mounted Nathan Orchard, and referee Mike Beltran stopped the action.
Yeah, it was a good stoppage too. Wagner's a very accomplished MMA fighter.
Yeah. So again, my point with in jiu-jitsu without strikes, full guard, totally unnecessary. You could win Abu Dhabi 10 years in a row and never put anybody in your full guard. If you never want to play full guard ever in regular jiu-jitsu without strikes, you never have to play full guard. You just open up your legs and you just get into some Z or some kind of spiral deli heave or whatever. You never have. It's totally optional. You don't. Most people don't even bother with it. Krone Gracie, he does. He loves full guard, you know, whether they're strikes or not. That's why it's full guard in MMA. Is very effective because he always played full guard in his regular jiu-jitsu without grappling. So what happens with jiu-jitsu is you add strikes in an MMA match or in a combat jiu-jitsu match. It's the same thing. When strikes are added, now full guard becomes the most important guard. It was the least important guard in grappling. Now it becomes the most important guard. So if you weren't playing full guard when you were doing jiu-jitsu without the strikes, and now you're doing jiu-jitsu with the strikes, guess what? That's the guard that's going to be the most important one when a guy could smack your head.
Yeah, control posture,
yes.
Pull guard.
Yes.
Yeah, you have to control posture.
Yeah, and again, in sub-only, you don't ever have to mount ever. You never have to pass the guard. But in combat jiu-jitsu, now the mount becomes super powerful because now you can mount and strike. Mm. In sub-only, if you mount, you can't strike. You know, I like mounting and sub only, but you don't have to. You can get caught in leg locks. If a guy has a good mount escape right into leg locks, that's what usually happens. Most leg lock masters are very good at letting dudes mount them, and then they buck them off, and right when they escape, they're already on the legs. A lot of leg lockers do that. And, you know, but when there's strikes, You're going to let a dude mount you now? Now that he's going to strike you now. It's a big difference. Now, the mount from jiu-jitsu with no strikes to jiu-jitsu with strikes, combat jiu-jitsu, the mount just turns into this monster.
Well, it does, but what's really interesting is you're only allowing slaps. Think about how much more of a monster it
strikes.
Is.
Okay, palm strike. Because dudes aren't slapping. They're
right.
not going
to hitting. No, but they're hitting hard,
yeah,
right?
But they're
so
actually
you're not
striking.
What I was going to say is you're not allowing elbows.
No.
Like if you allowed elbows,
yeah.
then
let's,
it's.
Let's, exactly.
That would, yeah, it's pretty much
nothing
over
wrong with
a
that.
Lot of
that's
those
a,
positions, right?
Yeah. Depends on what kind of guard
yeah.
we're dealing with. It depends
sure.
on who's in the guard. I mean.
But like if you allowed the back to be taken and you allowed elbows, would you go to what we've always said? You said this a long time ago that. If you had elbows, if elbows were allowed to the back of the head,
mm-hmm.
they would change the whole back mount.
You would
be
need,
nobody
you,
going for rear naked
no.
chokes.
You would just get the back and just elbow the shit out of the back of their head, and the fight's over. That's what
yeah.
was happening early in MMA before they outlawed those elbows. They used to be legal for like a couple years.
You remember the World Combat, whatever the fuck it was, where Henzo Gracie fought that guy. What is his name?
The judo guy?
Yeah, I want to say Spiker.
Yes.
Yeah.
Something Spiker.
Something Spiker.
Yeah.
And the judo guy had called him in his hotel room all through the middle of the night, fucked with
yes.
him, and he got so pissed that when he choked the guy out, he smashed him in the back of the head and then stepped on his neck as he walked off of
yeah.
him. He took it. He
yeah.
didn't choke him out. He took his back, right? He
yeah.
tapped him with strikes, didn't he? Or did he choke him? I don't remember. He smashed him.
I'm not sure how he finished him, but I do remember him standing up and stepping on his neck.
Yeah.
Like, stomped on it.
See if you can find that video. You got the video of the stoppage? It's horrific. But this is the perfect example of how effective elbows to the back of the head are once you take the back mount. So, like, part of me, I see.
There it is.
Yeah.
That
Henzo.
Was quick, Jamie.
Henzo was a bad motherfucker, dude. People forget.
He's still down to throw down.
Fuck yeah, he is. Look at that. Look at this. Back mount. And then, doom,
oh,
doom,
are, that's
doom,
it right there. That's
doom.
It.
Oh, yeah. Oh, so
and
did
then
he get the choke?
Him.
So he did get the choke. Those fucking shots were
Those
all
elbows.
It took, man. That's he's tapping right there. And Henzo keeps holding on to him even after he
taps. He choked
taps.
Him with the gi.
Yeah. And then watch, he gets off of him and steps on his neck. Henzo. That guy is fucked up. And that's from those elbows, man. That position changes radically. Look at him. He's trying to pick him up. Henzo just rolls him over on his back. Oh, that is hilarious.
Man, that was a big mistake wearing a gi.
Oh, huge mistake wearing a gi with a guy like Henzo.
Yeah.
You know, he control
you
with that
me?
Thing and you don't have it and he doesn't have a gi on? What?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's. Silly
and
idea.
The back becomes even more. It's easier to get rear naked chokes as we're allowing, you know, if you got a
right.
guy's back, you could palm the side of their head.
Well, it's
it
also
opens
the
up the
body.
Choke.
Like if you have elbows to the body, remember when Rampage stopped Chuck Liddell with elbows to the body? People
yeah.
forget about that in Pride. Elbows to the body, a guy who really knows how to throw an elbow, that's nasty. You know, I mean, combat jiu-jitsu, you're opening up the door. What you're doing is like you're opening up this door to letting jiu-jitsu guys understand like where the positions where they'd be vulnerable.
Yes.
But they're
yes.
not going to take the kind of damage that they would in an MMA fight.
Exactly.
So it'll
exactly.
teach, yeah. It's
and
a
it's,
great
it,
pathway.
It's a few things on a few different levels. It's great for grapplers, whether they're wrestlers or jiu-jitsu players, to get into if they're aspiring to be an MMA fighter.
Yeah.
Also, guys that have done 30, 40 fights and they're like, dude, this is just too brutal. Guys coming out of MMA, it's a great place for them because generally, the you know, before combat jiu-jitsu, all a MMA fighter had to retire to if he wanted to keep competing in grappling is like sub-only or the points game. And if you're not working on that every day, you know, the last 10 years, they were working on striking most of their time. And the purest, like the pure sub-only guys, the leg lock guys, and the pure points players, they're working on that every day to win those styles, whether it's to win the points tournaments or the sub-only tournaments. Those, the athletes that are winning those titles, they're working on it every day. So when an MMA fighter retires, he's not going to really want to go into sub-only. He's like, dude, I'm just so far behind. They don't want to do it. But now
yeah.
with combat jiu-jitsu, 99.9% of the people that flooded me with, I got a long list of people that want to be in combat jiu-jitsu. They're all MMA fighters.
I'm sure it's
no,
like a walk in the
no,
park for them.
No pure jiu-jitsu guys. Only one.
Really?
Only one. And that's Ben Eddie. He's my brown belt from 10th Planet San Diego. He trained with Denny at first, then he started training with Gio and Boogie down in San Diego. He's a brown belt. He had a combat jiu-jitsu match with Wilson Hayes.
Whoa.
At Combat Jiu-Jitsu Worlds. And Ben Eddy probably has top two guards in the world.
Wow.
If you end up in his full guard, it's a wrap. He does a Hindulo team. He plays rubber guard way different than me. We have totally different styles of rubber guard. It all starts off with either like a meat hook or a mission control. But from there, everyone's going. It's so vast now. And he does a leg in guillotine. You heard of an arm in guillotine.
I've seen it.
Hindulo team.
Yeah.
It's the craziest. There's only like four guys on the planet that could do this. It's incredible.
How is he grabbing it?
That's a good question. You know what I mean? I've never done it. I know how to do it, but I've never actually. I don't have the flexibility for it. People think
hilarious.
People think that I'm super flexible. I'm like, I'm not that flexible. I'm pretty flexible, but I'm not that flexible. I just use it a lot, so it appears that I'm really flexible because I'm always using it. So it looks. But a lot of people can do what I do and way beyond as well. And Ben Eddy, his flexibility is insane. And he had a single match with Wilson Hayes, put him in his guard. And he tapped him with a dead orchard.
You know, I have a problem with people when it comes to the subject of flexibility. Because I feel like there's this conversation that people have when it comes to flexibility. They say you can only get so flexible. Like some people
that's
just can't
true.
Get so Yeah.
That's not true.
I don't agree with it either. I think there's like attention and focus to stretching that some people just don't want to give.
What I want to know, though, is to get to the contortionist level. Can anybody get to the contortionist level? Can you train someone to do those crazy, you know, when people like they bend their back all the way back and they get into like a scorpion?
You trying to suck your own dick?
Maybe. Why you got to bring up all shit?
I saw a video once where a guy did that. It's
but you know what I'm talking about?
He's a contortionist.
Can anybody train to be a contortionist? That's what I want to know. I'd like to see like before and after type like vlogs.
Right. But, like get Joey Diaz on it.
I don't know about being a contortionist. I don't know if everyone can go that far, but all you need to play rubber guard is to get into full lotus. And anybody can do that unless you have like metal plates in your hips or something.
Contortionists are skilled at stretching their bodies into different shapes, mostly due to their spinal flexibility and strength. You may think that you need to be born flexible or double-jointed to become a contortionist, but in fact, with enough practice and stretching, you can learn basic contortion movements. I feel like stretching is one of those things where people just aren't willing to dig in and really like feel that borderline edge every day. They don't like that feeling. It hurts. It's uncomfortable. Like certain stretches, like it's hard to breathe. Like when you do hamstring stretches, it's like it's hard to breathe.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. But, you know, I think that everyone is born flexible. Like I think all babies can get into full lotus. I just think that some people keep using it and some people don't. I always thought, because people would ask me, why are you flexible? And I thought it was because, you know, I was super insecure as a child. And I still am, but I would put my legs behind my head to like, you know, like this is my trick.
Right, right.
You know what I mean? So I thought that's why I'm flexible, because I was always trying to show off by putting my legs behind my head.
Maybe it is.
But when you think about it, I didn't show off like all the time. It was
a few times.
But then my mom came over to the house once and saw my son biting his own toenails. He goes, oh, look, just like you when you were a kid. You always, and then I thought, oh, that's right. I used to trim my, even like at 10, 11, 12, I used to trim my toenails with my mouth. Yeah.
You did that too? Jamie did that too? Yeah. You couple of freak toe suckers.
Yeah,
Jesus
I don't
Christ.
Do it anymore, but as a kid, I did it all the time. Even with dirt, I would like
James,
bite
like
the
I was
dirt.
Only six.
Like six
know,
or seven.
You know when you'd bite the toenail off, but has dirt, and you could feel the crunch in the
grindy,
teeth.
Crunchy, yeah. Always.
It's just a dirt. It's my foot. It's just dirt.
That's true. It's your foot. Yeah, I've done it with my fingernails. Like, why am I so prejudiced about my toes? Like, what if my feet are clean?
But to do the Hindulo team, like Ben Eddy, you have to. I mean, when I come back after my surgery, I'm going to have knee surgery. I'm
going to
come.
Who are you going to get your knee surgery with?
I'm
do you
not
have a doctor? I'll talk to you. We'll talk about it afterwards. I got some options for you.
I do have a doctor's
name. You
do? Yeah.
Oh, okay, cool.
Dr. Ron in Beverly Hills. He's a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt. He, or Dr. Rob, is it?
Better go to the right door.
Yeah. Let me see. Let me
is this the Hindulatine? Here it is. Yeah.
Look, so check out what he's doing.
Around the back of the head.
You have to swing it around. Past the
shoulder. Oh, wow. So this he goes like right over his ankle. That's Hindu control. Few people are just listening. He's got his leg wrapped over the back of his opponent's head, and then he's wrapped his arm around the ankle area, and he's going all the way around the dude's head and under the chin. My little T-Rex arms couldn't do that, dude. I don't have enough real estate. I don't think I could get in there. I'd have to, like, really compress
someone.
Did he
go through it yet?
He's doing it right now. This is something I think that people should watch, though.
Look at that. He does it. He's done it twice in an EBI.
Wow.
In one show.
That's crazy.
Watch. Look at him work.
So we're watching him set this exact thing up that he was just talking about. Wow. That's awesome.
But yeah, he's going to fight for the belt, the EBI combat jiu-jitsu belt that is currently held by Nick Holmstein. He's fighting Ben Eddy at the next EBI at the Muscle Farm HQ in Burbank. You heard about that?
Yeah. Awesome. I heard Muscle Farm moved to Burbank, right? Yep. Why did they decide to do that?
The CEO is from LA. He just wanted it here.
Dude, they were in 5,500 feet above sea level before in a city. That's a pretty rare thing to have. Like to be at a mile, like Denver's very unusual in that you are at high altitude, but you have a badass city. You know, like, they should have stayed in Denver. Fucked up, kids.
But it's awesome, dude. The facility is incredible.
They throw a fuckload of money at that stuff.
So far, they had a Fight to Win show there, and that was awesome. That was like maybe 3 weeks ago. It was awesome. The place is spectacular. So we're doing a show there Saturday, February 17th, EBI 15th. Gio's in it. Eddie Cummings is in it. Eddie Cummings is the champion. Gio's in it. And
so Eddie Cummings came back from a bunch of surgeries, right? Didn't he have some shit go wrong? A bunch of injuries.
He's been hurt a couple times. It's normal, though.
Yeah. Especially his style, right? And you got to think, he's constantly training with all those Donaher Death Squad leg lock masters are going after each other every day.
Yeah.
Testing their meniscus.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Leg locks scare the shit out of people.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. They should.
But back to that Rafael Dos Anjos fight. I just can't believe how good that dude looks at 170 pounds. He looks like top 10 pound for pound in the world, for sure. Like, dude, the combinations he was landing on Robbie Lawler, fuck, man. He looks so goddamn good.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
And you think this guy was making 150, making 154, you know?
He still looks like a small welterweight, though. He could add some more muscle, I think, because some of those guys at 170 are monsters.
Like Darren Till. Huge.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
But he kicks so hard. I think the kicks are going to always, he's always going to be in the game, even if he's smaller. His kicks are so hard.
He's fast as shit, too, man. And his combinations are beautiful. And he's just super dedicated. Like, Rafael Dos Anjos is very, very disciplined, very driven. You ever see some of his plyometric workouts that he does?
No.
He was with Nick Curson from Speed of Sport. I know he's done some work with other people too, but he did a lot of it with Nick Curson. And Nick Curson's from that the Marinovich camp, you know, where remember when BJ Penn was trained by the Marinoviches? So he's doing like this kind of shit, like pushing up on all these bars, a lot of foot strength drills, a lot of stuff where they're doing jumps over hurdles and, you know, those horses. What are those called? Hurdles, right? Yeah. He just does a lot of plyometric type shit.
That is hardcore.
Yeah. That's working your abs. You're working your feet. He's lying on his back, and he's kicking up on these things. It would give you, like, the ultimate up kick, too. But the idea is just that you're put in these compromising positions, off balance all the time, and you're doing a lot of different plyometric drills. He doesn't believe too much in like regular weightlifting type activity. Everything is like sports specific, plyometric type shit. But what I'm always super impressed with is his endurance. Dude, he fought at a crazy pace. And like the commentator, Cormier and John Anik were going, man, I wonder if he's going to burn himself out. You know, I already knew the result before I watched it. I got to watch it after the fact. I didn't watch it live. But watching it, I was like, man, I see why they would think that he might have burnt himself out, because it's crazy, the volume. Just dig, and they're so skillful too, man. It was like he was picking his shots. You know, he'd go head, head, body, body, head, head, body, head, body, head. It was all like creative and constantly attacking, and Robbie Lawler's just rolling with it. It's like defensively and offensively, it's a very impressive scene, because Robbie Lawler's hurt. He can't move his leg good. His leg's been chopped up, so he's kind of stationary. And Dos Anjos is just moving in for the kill and throwing bombs on him. And Robbie Lawler is just rolling with everything. Mm. He's taking a lot of them in the body, but he's rolling with everything. It's hard to hit him clean. And he's right in front of him in the middle of the fight. In the middle of this exchange, Robbie Lawler smiling.
Yeah.
Crazy, right?
Yeah.
Can't walk. Like, barely can move. He's getting his leg kicked out from under him. He's fighting a guy who's just like a Wolverine. I mean, just on him, attacking. And Robbie Lawler smiling.
But he did pull it out of his ass against Melvin Mann, who
fuck yeah,
that?
He did. Woo!
Can we see that?
Yeah.
Remember he was getting... It was Elite XE? Or was it Strikeforce?
Strikeforce?
Strikeforce. He was getting beat down by Melvin Manhoof.
Yeah.
And then one shot, boom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He always had that chance.
Yep.
Right to the very end, he had that chance.
Yep. Yeah, the Melvin Manhoof one, too, was at 185. That was a bigger Robbie. Remember? He fought Tim Kennedy at 185. He fought a couple good guys at 185. He fought Jake Shields. Remember Jake Shields tapped him at 185?
Oh.
Oh, boom. Go back a little so we can see the beginning. He's getting his leg kicked all over. Look how much bigger he looks back then. And Melvin moves in for the kill, and Robbie hits him with a fucking haymaker.
Oh.
I mean, boom, and then follows up with a left hand that stiffened him. I mean, that's like one of the all-time Strikeforce KOs. Maybe one of the all-time MMA KOs, because he's getting his ass kicked. He's moving away. And then he steps in, and here it goes.
Man,
he's getting his legs kicked out from under him. Here it is. Bam. Crazy. And you see Melvin's body just shut off.
Is he still fighting?
Yeah.
Hey, maybe he could fight in the UFC now.
No, he's had a lot of KOs, man. He's fighting. I think he's fighting for Bellator right now. He's been KO'd quite a few times recently.
That's one of those guys that never got into the UFC.
No, almost, man. I mean, maybe he could put some wins together and get back in the UFC and get in the UFC for the first time. But he's, you know, I got to think he's like 37 now. How old is Melvin Manhoof? It's going to be, I don't know, man. I think he's got to be 36, 37. 41?
Yeah. What's his biggest
long-ass
MMA
career.
Win?
MMA, Mark Hunt, one punch.
Damn.
He KO'd Mark Hunt with one punch. Mark Hunt charged at him. Mark Hunt was like 260, and I don't think anybody ever stopped Mark like that before. And Melvin clipped him with an uppercut coming in.
He's like 190?
Maybe. Yeah, maybe 200. So he was, at the very least, he was like 60 pounds lighter. At the very least. Fuck. Knocked him out with one punch. Remember when he fought Sakuraba? Soccer kick Sakuraba? It was one of Sakuraba's most terrifying losses.
Melvin.
Melvin fucked him up, dude.
I know what happened, but I don't remember it.
Pull up Melvin Manhoof versus Sakuraba. This was hard for me to watch because it was Sakuraba who had fought Vanderlei. Twice he'd been KO'd by Vanderlei. He fought a lot of guys, and he had gotten beat up quite a bit. You were seeing, like, the demise of, in my opinion, like, one of the most charismatic guys from that generation. I didn't know a word that guy said. Never heard him speak English in, like, any long sentences, but I knew he had charisma. Just by the way he fought, the way he handled himself.
Remember when he wore diapers?
Yeah, he was crazy. Oh, my God, look how big Melvin is. He's on all the steroids. This is, they did not give a fuck back then, man. They let these guys, look how jacked he is. Holy shit. Melvin Manhoof had one of the scariest bodies of all time, for sure, right?
Hell yeah.
Look at him. I mean, dude, he's jacked. And he was so fucking fast. You know, it's just like any old warrior. He's just had a lot of fights, and, you know, this is where he's at now.
But, look how high his hands are. Yeah. Sakuraba never held his hands high like that before.
Very dangerous. And look, Melvin's just waiting.
He'd always have his hands low. Remember that?
Yep. Not against Melvin, man. Especially not at this point in his career. And Herb Alsakuraba's fucking knees, man. That wasn't just for show. His knees were basically, like, falling apart on him. So he had to, like, wrap them up in the most insane mummy-like way late on in his career. Well, people forget Sakuraba beat Vitor. Sakuraba broke Henzo's arm. Remember that?
Yep.
Dude.
I commentated that fight.
Oh, that's right. You worked for Pride back then.
Yeah.
Look at this shit. Look at the size of Melvin. He just looks like a coil. Look at that. Head kick. Right hand. Boom. Oh, my God. Boom. Passes a guard. Boom, 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 boom. This is one of the hardest ones to watch. Here's the knee. Knee to the head. Now he's going to move him to the side and try with a soccer kick.
Oh,
boom. Right hand.
Shit.
How'd they not stop this fight, right? How'd they not stop this fight? Boom. Because it was Sakuraba and you wanted to give him a chance.
That
boom.
Leg drag to the right hand?
There it is. Bam,
oh,
bam, bam.
Shit.
So I thought he soccer kicked him in the head on the ground. I had erroneous memories. I could have swore he soccer kicked him in the head, but really he was kneeing him in the head. Somebody soccer kicked him in the head. He had another.
I think that's Vanderlei.
I think you might be right. Vanderlei definitely did it to Tamura, right? Remember he held the rope and stomped him? Remember that one? He KO'd, he dropped him. Tamura went down, he grabs the rope and stomps his head. It's rough. It's rough to watch.
I remember Vanderlei was mounting Dan Henderson and then just stood up and tried to stomp on his face.
Oh, that's
and
right.
And walk away.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
I don't know if he landed, though.
See if you find Vanderlei KO's Tamura. Did you get it?
I got the flying stomp kick.
Oh, this is.
It didn't land, I guess.
Yeah, no, that's just Sakuraba trying to do that. That was to Vitor, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was. That Vitor is a Vitor that was in rough shape, though. He that was after his sister had gotten kidnapped and murdered, I believe. Remember, Vitor was like a shell of himself for a long time after that. Remember?
I think he was in the UFC at that point.
I don't think so. You might be right, though.
When he fought Sakuraba in Japan, is that what you're talking about? Remember he threw out turning sidekick and dropped him?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, turning sidekick into the body.
Yeah, right to the body. And dropped Vitor, and he just basically butt-scoot most of the match.
What's interesting, too, about Sakuraba is he had a catch wrestling base. You know, like he had some real submission skills and people didn't know in the beginning. Remember his first fight in the UFC? He gets dropped by Conan Silveira. Referee Big John McCarthy stops the fight and then realizes it was an error because he had dropped down for a knee. So they fight again.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yep.
What the fuck?
First time UFC was in Japan, right?
Dude, it was like, this is Sakuraba. You need to fight again. You let this shit go one more. And then he catches him in that arm bar. He tapped him with an armbar, and everybody was like, what? A Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt got tapped? We didn't even think it was possible.
Yeah.
We didn't think anybody, some guy who doesn't even have a black belt, is going to tap?
Yeah. When Mario Sperry got tapped by Igor Zinoviev, remember that? That was, we didn't know what to fucking think.
How can this be?
That was devastating for me. Oh.
How can this be? How can this be?
There it is.
Yeah.
He reversed the Kimura on him and took the armbar.
Yeah. Man, he got it right there. Man, crazy. Look how Jack Sakuraba was back then. He was in great shape. He's such a fucking awesome grappler. And so important to like the history of MMA. That guy was in some wild fights. And some of them with people he had no business being in there with. Just the wrong people. Like Vanderlei. Like that was just a terrible matchup.
You know how rare that is? Like there's a lot of bad calls and a lot of fighters that get fucked from bad ref calls. You can't ever do the fight over again. You can't do the fight. That was one of the only times. It happened another time, too.
Yeah.
It happened when I commentated for Too Hot to Handle in Amsterdam. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah, I do remember
back
that.
Back in 2001. It was Gilbert Ivel against... Fuck. I don't know who... I don't remember who it was, but Gilbert Ivel knocks this guy out. Or standing TKO, they stop the fight, and then the guy's complaining to the ref. Like, why did you stop it? He's like, why did you stop it? I was fine, but clearly he wasn't fine. But you got to at least, you know, plead your case.
Right.
And make it look like you're fine. Like, why didn't you stop it? Why didn't you stop it? Then the ref just said, you know what? You ready to go? Get back. We're going to go again. He put Gilbert in one corner, the other dude, and then once that guy, you see it in his face, once he realizes that the ref restarted the fight, he sinks back into the corner and goes, oh, shit, what the fuck is going on? And he gets knocked out again.
What did you put on here, Jamie?
This is it. It was against Don Fry.
Which one? Oh, Gilbert Ivel?
Yeah. Or maybe this is another one.
No.
Wait a minute. Which fight are you talking about? No, the restart? No, 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 no. No,
no, no. This was too hot.
This was
put Gilbert Ivel too hot to handle.
What happened to Don Fry? Did he get poked in the eye or something? Did he have a cut? Like, why were they checking on him? I don't remember what happened earlier in that fight.
I don't even remember what happened in that fight.
I don't remember what
Gilbert Ivel
at all.
Versus Don Fry? That sounds awesome.
Do you remember when Big Daddy Goodrich KO'd Don Fry with a head kick?
Gilbert Ivel KO'd Big Daddy Goodrich.
Yeah, and Big Daddy Goodrich KO'd Don Fry with a head kick. This is Don Fry and Gilbert Ivel. See if you can find Don Fry or Big Daddy Goodrich KO's Don Fry.
On that
card,
hit
him with a beautiful head kick.
On that card that I commentated, it was Pride 10. It was Soccer Robin Henzo. That was the main event, but also it was Gilbert Ivel versus Gary Goodrich. And
yeah,
that was that,
that
one. Yeah, if you could... Find Gary Goodrich against Gilbert Ivel. It's a 10-second match.
Yeah.
And it's one kick. Boom, he clips him, shuts him off.
Here's the Gary Goodrich, Don Fry one. He hit him with a couple of leg kicks. Big Daddy had one of the most brutal KOs ever in the history of the UFC, too. Remember that from the fireman's carry?
Oh, shit. Against Paul Herrera?
Yep.
That was the most brutal knockout probably in history.
It's one of them. Boom.
Oh,
look at that. I mean, come on.
Damn.
That's a beautiful head kick. Over the shoulder.
He got one back.
Yeah,
Well, that one that happened against him, he was out for like 5 minutes. It was one of those. And then he told me that when he woke up, he was standing in the ring. He thought he was in a rave in Toronto. Because that's where he's from.
What if he was? What if we're all living and we have parallel dimensions all around us all the time, and one move left or right, one dream, one action propels you into the next door? What if he was like on death's door and they decide, look, he's gone from this dimension. We're going to put him in a nightclub in Toronto and let his consciousness ride out this experience from here.
And he was with
his, nope, he's back.
His sister was always with him. She was like, she was a fitness chick.
She was jacked.
Yeah.
Crazy braids.
And he said when he woke up, he thought he was at a rave, and he thought his sister was some chick he was macking on.
Oh my God, that's so crazy.
He had no idea it was his sister.
That's so crazy. Yeah, that guy's had a long career, man. Taking a lot of crazy fights. So do you think Dos Anjos going to get a shot at Woodley now?
You would know better than I would.
I don't, though. I would think you would.
You don't get
want
inside scoops
to.
Anymore?
I do. I'd have to ask, though. I feel like I shouldn't ask.
Why
sometimes,
not?
Sometimes I get in some inside info. But for the inside info I get, I can never talk about anyway. But this one's a weird one, man, because he was lightweight champion, you know, loses the belt, and then has looked insane as a welterweight and just beats the former champion, like outclasses him. I think he stands out as the number one guy in terms of like guys getting another shot at the title. But Woodley apparently is going to get some sort of surgery now.
Mm.
He needs shoulder surgery. He's got like a torn labrum. So if Tyron Woodley goes out and then they have to put an interim title fight in, I would like to see him versus somebody in an interim title fight. Like, how about Rafael Dos Anjos versus Colby Covington?
Hmm.
All the anti-Brazilian hate, all the shit that he said.
That'd be nice.
That would be crazy. That would be crazy. And it would be a big fight. You know, because of all the shit Colby talked, you know, they only fined Verdum like $500 for hitting him in the head with a boomerang.
$600.
Fabricio's probably like, that is so worth it. To get to hit somebody in the head with a boomerang on TV, you know?
Yeah, you know, the opposite of a fight like that, which would have a lot of hatred, is in Orlando, the UFC in Orlando, it's going to be Ben Saunders versus Alan Jobon.
Well, that's hard.
Yeah, that's hard. I'm staying away from that one.
That's going to be a hard one for me, too.
Yeah, I told them both not to take it, but the problem is they're on losing streaks, and they can't be choosing. And they did reach out and say, hey, man, we're both 10 Planet. You know, can we find other opponents? And they said no. So they both agreed to do it, and I'm staying out of that one.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't corner anybody, right?
Yeah,
are you going to go and watch?
It's going to be two friends fighting.
Are you going to go to watch?
No. Watch on TV.
You know,
I'm going to stay completely out of it.
I was just going to tell you, like, I like being there live, but I have the most fun when it's us. When we do Fight Companions,
yeah,
and we're all here drinking, smoking weed, talking crazy shit.
I've been to enough UFCs, man. I'm like, you know,
yeah, you've been to a lot, that's for sure.
I'd rather watch it on my phone.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Well, I don't like watching it on my phone, but I do like watching it at home. I like watching boxing at home too, man. You know, it's like you get all the angles, you get to hear the commentary. Roy Jones Jr. had some fucking amazing commentary this weekend on boxing. It's so interesting hearing a guy like Roy Jones who like points shit out. He was I forget the two dudes that were fighting. There's an Irish guy. There were two guys that I never heard of. I think one of them was Williams, the other one was O'Sullivan or something like that. And I didn't know who they were. And I was waiting for the main event, and I was watching this dude, and Roy Jones was pointing out all the shit that he was doing with his jab. He's like, he's staying right there after he throws a jab. He's going to get hit with counters. And then you see, boom, the counters start dropping on him. And the guy who was getting hit was the guy who was favored. He was like, this is a really hot prospect. And Roy just starts pointing out all the shit he's doing. He's like, he's playing tough guy now. He goes, I don't want to see you play tough guy. He goes, I want to see you boxing. He goes, you don't want to find out who the toughest guy is. He goes, you want to find out who the best boxer is. These guys are just trying to break each other now. He totally called it. And you see the guy starting to wilt, shots to the body. It was really interesting to watch like a world champion, top of the food chain, one of the greatest of all time boxers, see some shit that you're not going to see, you know? Like he sees vulnerabilities that you don't see.
Are there any high-level boxers that are openly talking about transitioning to MMA? Do you know?
Not that I know of. I think Anthony Jacobs has joked about it. You know, the heavyweight champion, Anthony Joshua. Why do I call him Anthony Jacobs? Anthony Joshua is his name, right? Jesus Christ. You know, Klitschko used to be a kickboxer. You know that? His brother especially. I think his brother was like a world champion, PKA, karate-style kickboxer. But no, none that I know of, man. Floyd talked about it, apparently. This is one thing I can tell you. Dana told me that Floyd wants to make a deal in the UFC, like legitimately. And I go, I texted him. I go, is Floyd really talking about fighting MMA? He goes, yeah, he's fucking crazy. I told him he'd get killed, but he's still talking about doing it.
Hmm. Whoa.
Faraz Sahabi teases GSP versus Mayweather or McGregor as next fight. We need a mega fight. Okay, let me just stop this nonsense right there. GSP just fought at 185 pounds. If you fucking really think that Floyd Mayweather is going to fight GSP, shut the fuck up. Just stop. Just stop it. Floyd Mayweather is going to be like, a pass. That guy's huge.
Yeah.
GSP's so big.
It would have to be like Jose Aldo or something.
You'd have to get GSP to diet down to 155, and he would be so depleted and making 155, Floyd would light him up like a Christmas tree. If Floyd didn't light him up like a Christmas tree anyway, I mean, they're going to fight in MMA, he gets smushed 100%.
McGregor
there's no way
would never fight 185 GSP.
No. But they might fight at 170 if the money was right. If
McGregor won't take it.
I don't know about that, man. That could be a mega, mega fight. That could be a $20 million fight. Conor might want an extra 20. Spend a lot of money on Versace. He's always wearing furs and shit. Flying around in private jets. That shit's pricey, man.
What is the latest with McGregor? Like, what's going on, like, today?
Hashtag ballin'. That's what's going on.
Is that what he tweets?
He's on top of the world, man. Look, that guy, let him enjoy this. He's got plenty of time to come back to fighting. Just have fun, man. Stare at your watches. Take Instagram pictures of your dick. Who cares? You're the fucking man. You made $100 million. You're not even 30. Relax. Do whatever the fuck you want. No need to force him to come back and fight. But if he does come back and fight, if he thinks an MMA fight with GSP is a good idea, like, that's a big guy. He's very big.
Yeah.
George St. Pierre is one of the best fighters of all time.
He ain't gonna take that fight.
He's so fucking good at grappling. But Conor might go, fuck it.
No.
Fuck it. Give me a couple months to put some weight on.
That's not a good fight for him.
But if that's where all the money is, who knows? I think Tony Ferguson is the fight. That's the fight I want to see now.
Of course.
Until I see what happens with Barboza and Nurmagomedov, right? The problem is, if Barboza and Nurmagomedov fight and Nurmagomedov smashes Barboza, he's got to be next in line for the title fight, right?
No.
You don't think so? Connor's not fighting.
Tony is the... But...
Connor's not fighting.
Yeah, well, then he has to vacate, right?
What does it say here? Sorted rounds tonight at SGB, BG, Ireland. He's training. I mean, he's definitely not fat. You look at him there. He's in shape for sure. I mean, but he might just be working on his skills. He's got $100 million. I would not be mad at a world fight if they decided to, like, strip him of his belt and have Tony versus Khabib for the undisputed title. I wouldn't be mad at that.
Yeah, that'll probably happen.
I would not be mad at that. I like that fight. Tony's so fun. He's so wild to watch, man. You know, like when he was fighting Kevin Lee and he's walking towards him with his hands down and just pot shotting him and slowly wearing on him, slowly chipping him away, and then to finish him off his back. Come on, man.
That was sweet.
How many people get finished off their back these days?
There was a lot of sweet things that that he came up with right there, like working, you know, there's different ways you can get up off your back with the cage, or like basic wall walking and stuff like that. But you can't wall walk on everybody.
Right.
It all depends on where your level of wall walking is and how good is your opponent at countering that.
What did you think when Kevin Lee walked in with the obvious staph infection on his chest? Did you notice it?
I was like, cool. I hope he's weak.
Crazy, he's forced to
fight.
Tony
said, they asked Tony, did you notice his staff? He goes, yeah, I was trying to punch it. But the way Tony got up off the cage, when Kevin Lee put him up against the cage, he actually can opener him from the bottom in full guard. So Tony's head was against the cage.
Mm-hmm.
And Kevin Lee's head was right here. So he basically did like a Muay Thai clinch, like a can opener from the bottom. So he couldn't get hit. And then he had his left foot on the hip and his right leg was just around his ribs. And then at the right time, Kevin was naturally trying to pull out because he was holding him in. He couldn't hit him. He was safe against the cage. And then Tony put both feet on the hips, pushed him up, kicked up, and then just stood up. It was brilliant. Wow. It's like, wow, we're going to be doing that one.
Yeah.
I'm going to be I mean, Kevin Lee couldn't do anything. He had him exactly where he wanted him, against the cage, on his back, head pressed against the fence, but he couldn't do anything because Tony did a can opener on him. No one does that.
I know. He's an interesting guy, man.
That was the first time he ever did that, and it worked.
It's crazy.
Yeah. It was perfect.
What did you think? What do you think about Francis Ngannou and Alistair Overeem? How ridiculous was that?
Yeah.
How fucking scary is that guy?
How many times has Alistair been KO'd?
We did it on a podcast. Once I broke it down, it was like something like 13 KOs in MMA and then another 3 in kickboxing.
Ooh. The ones in kickboxing seem so much more brutal.
I don't know. More brutal than that last one. That last one is as brutal as anything I've ever seen. He got launched into another dimension.
I'm not a giant kickboxing fan. I mean, really, I never watch kickboxing. But if it's on, I'll watch it. And if it's, you know, if
remember
it's someone
when
I
went
know,
to see Glory in L.A. though, that was the shit.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm
last
not like
standing.
I'm not following it. You know what I mean? I don't know who the hell is winning. I have no idea. Zero idea. But when I do watch it, every now and then I'll watch a K1. You do notice that they hit a lot motherfucking harder. The leg kicks and the.
Ooh.
Oh, I'm like, fuck, this is some other kind of shit. I'm not, you could visibly see it after watching so much MMA and then go watch some kickboxing. You'll see how hard they fucking kick.
Yeah.
There's some serious kicking going on.
Well, you see it now with like Gokhan Saki. Now that Gokhan Saki's in the UFC, you know, I was watching.
Where's
someone,
he from?
Turkey. Turkish Tyson. He's ridiculous. I mean, he's a brutal knockout artist in K1 and in Glory. To see that dude fighting in the UFC, you see these crazy kicks.
You see
ridiculous
you
power.
See kickboxers transitioning to MMA.
Yeah.
But you don't see professional boxers transitioning to
MMA.
It's
too hard. Without the leg kicks, your whole striking thing is so different. You got to think about those goddamn leg kicks. I mean, some guys are going to be able to make it. It's not impossible. All they have to do is be super dedicated at it, but they have to have a motivation. And right now, the motivation in boxing is, you know, if you get to a high level, you could be a world champion. You make a shitload of money. And there's a lot of money at the highest levels of boxing. But even at the highest levels of boxing, like, you have to have some name value. Like, they did a Gennady Golovkin pay-per-view, and it got, like, 150,000 buys. And didn't they say that Ward Kovalev was like really low as well? One of the best fights ever. Ward Kovalev 2. Andre Ward stopped Andre Kovalev. Fucking amazing fight. Sergey Kovalev, rather. And I think it only got like 160-something.
125.
125,000 pay-per-view buys. That's crazy. So those guys aren't making shitloads of money for that.
But
like,
then you have Mayweather. It's crazy, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Yeah. But to do your sport, like this is what you've... If you're a really good boxer, you probably have more of a chance of making it as a top-flight boxer than you do of learning all that other shit while you're already 29. You're going to learn how to check leg kicks now? Okay, you got to change your stance. Do you know how to take people down? You don't? You got to learn that. You got to learn how to get taken down. Okay. You got to learn how to stand back up. You got to learn how to defend submissions. You got to learn how to execute submissions. By the time that, I mean, they're basically...
That could take 7 years.
It could take forever. Whereas a kickboxer, it's a little different. If you get Mirko Krokop, when he fought Wanderlei Silva, he was fighting like one of the top guys like almost right away because he was so scary on the feet, and they made some crazy rules. Remember those crazy rules? Like you can only be on the ground for 30 seconds?
I don't remember those rules.
They had a crazy rule with Wanderlei versus Krokop, the first one. First Wanderlei versus Krokop.
I don't remember those
bunch of wacky rules, man. Like you go to the ground. You can only go to the ground for like 30 seconds, and if no one won at the end of the fight, it was a draw. So it was real weird, man. It's like Krokop didn't know really how to stop takedowns as well back then. And, you know, he's just trying to get off his kicks. And he got off a bunch of kicks. But then they fought again. And they fought again later when Krokop had figured out the takedown defense game. And it was one of the worst KOs of Wanderlei's career. Krokop fucking clanged him upside the head with that left shin. Remember that one?
Mm-hmm.
He opened up a giant gash on Wanderlei's head. So Wanderlei goes down. Like, literally, he was an axe murderer. That was his nickname. The axe murderer literally went down like he got hit in the head with an axe. Blood pouring down his head. That was one of the all-time great Mirko Krokop head kick knockouts.
Was it Mirko Krokop? I'm pretty sure it was, who fought that guy in Japan who wore a wrestling mask.
Yeah, Dos Caros.
Yes, he clipped him on the head, and you just see the blood pouring out of his eye socket.
Dude.
The eye-opening.
Wasn't that when he was fighting with shoes on, too? He fought a bunch of those with wrestling shoes on. They let Mirko head kick people with red wrestling shoes on.
Yeah.
I know he fought Mark Hunt with wrestling shoes on. He head kicked Mark Hunt with wrestling shoes on.
How about Pete Williams head kicked Mark Coleman with wrestling shoes?
Yes, he did. Yeah. That's crazy. A lot of people wore wrestling shoes back then. It's an interesting argument. Like, what's worse to get in your eye? A toe in your eye or fucking... wrestling shoes. Wrestling shoes are so much better for traction, though. Look at him there. Boom! With fucking tape on his shit. Nobody took a punch or a kick ever as good as Mark Hunt, which is why it's even crazier that Melvin knocked him out. Look at that. Boom! Right over the top. And Mark Hunt still in it, throwing bombs. What a savage. So, Ngannou now is going to fight Stipe. What do you think of that?
That's a tough one to call.
Whew. That's an interesting fight, though, isn't it?
Stipe was on your podcast. What did he say?
Well, he's pretty confident. That's what he says. But I would say that, too. But that dude, Ngannou, is like a character from a fucking Conan book. You know? Like, somebody brought this up online, that, like, how Conan, when he was young, they made him push that wheel, and that's how he got so strong. Francis Ngannou was like working in like a sand mine. He was digging sand when he was like a young guy. Like that literally might have had an effect on how fucking powerful and strong he is. It really might be like an epic fantasy novel. Like he's like, if you were going to go into a lab and design a perfect heavyweight, you'd say, well, I'm about 6'4", 265, maybe a little heavier as to cut a little bit, maybe 269, cuts down to 265. Crazy freak athleticism, fast as shit for heavyweight, knock anybody dead with one punch. And people are like, you're asking for too much.
Yeah.
Heavyweights don't move that fast. They get tired real quick. Not everyone can knock you out with one punch.
Is he from France?
He was originally from Cameroon, I think. Is that right? Yeah. And then France after that. Dude, he was, look at this. It was grueling and dangerous work, spending hours shoveling sand into the backs of trucks so it could be shipped to big cities for using construction. Sometimes we would stand all day in water up to his shins, scooping sand out of the riverbed. Other days we spent at the bottom of a steep quarry where large chunks of earth often broke free from the high cliffs and tumbled down onto workers. Fuck, man, that's a movie. That's like
the beginning of a movie right there.
You want to talk about that Drake song? Started from the bottom that way here.
Yeah.
I mean, he really started from the bottom.
Yeah.
I mean, he was there. He was homeless in France just like 6 years ago, 5 years ago. Did you know that?
No.
Dude. He was homeless in France.
What's the story? Like, how did he get into MMA?
He was in Africa, and he had decided that he was going to take a trip to Europe. And he wanted to get away from where he was. And he decides to go there. He doesn't exactly know what he's doing. And somehow or another, he makes his way into a gym because he wanted to learn how to box. And he made his way into an MMA gym. And the coach was like, look, you should try MMA. Like, you know, like you could really get good at this. And he realizes the guy's a sponge, learns shit ridiculously quick. You look at him in his first UFC fight versus now with Curtis Blaydes. Watch the Curtis Blaydes fight and then watch him now. That's only 2 years ago, man. It's only 2 years ago. But his improvement is insane. He just knocked out with one punch one of the greatest heavyweight kickboxers ever. And Alistair Overeem was a K-1 Grand Prix champion, Strikeforce heavyweight champion, Dream heavyweight champion. You don't get any more experience than Alistair Overeem. Fought for the title, right? One punch, first round. Boom.
It is a little late in his career, though.
It is. Good point. But
has anybody gone the distance with him, or is he knocking everybody out?
No, he lost one fight. I think he got lost a decision. I think. Like an early fight in his career. And then I think Anthony Hamilton, he submitted him with a Kimura. He submitted someone with a Kimura. I think it was Hamilton. Is that correct? Let's see. Anthony Hamilton, yeah. He submitted Anthony Hamilton with a Kimura, KO'd Orlovsky, KO'd Overeem. The KO of Bojan Miahovic was a crazy one, man. He was just dropping bombs on him. Curtis Blaydes was before that. He TKO'd him. Dr. Stoppage. Luis Enrique was before that. That was the first time I ever saw him, and I was like, Jesus. But it looks like decision unanimous against a dude named Zumana Cisse, C-I-S-S-E. Cisse? Zumana Cisse? What a great name.
Dude, he's got his first fight he won by armbar.
Yeah, straight armbar. He's got an arm triangle choke. He's got a standing guillotine choke submission. And he's got one submission in the UFC by Kimura. He's working with Vinny Magalhães, you know.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, Vinny Magalhães says he's so fucking strong. Says he's the strongest guy I've ever rolled with.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
He's in Vegas now.
Yep. He's at the UFC Training Institute. Dude, They got him over there like Rocky IV. It's crazy.
Damn, like he's
Drago? At the Performance Institute, yeah. He's like literally, I mean, think about this, right? You got a guy who's arguably one of the best physical specimens we've ever seen in the heavyweight division. Like, right, like you can't think of someone who's more impressive than him physically, right? Then you have a guy who just gives up his whole life for this. Like, he just moved from France to Vegas. Then the UFC puts him in this fucking state-of-the-art laboratory, this performance institute, where they've got all kinds of crazy shit in there. I mean, they have therapists and food. They have all these strength and conditioning coaches. I mean, these guys are starting to do their camps down there. They're going there, and they go like, holy shit. Like, this place is insane. You know, Nowitzki was telling me all the different services they offer and all the different things they do for the athletes. For them, it's fucking amazing. All these top flight coaches are there training with them. So you got this amazing facility opens, right? He's like one of the first guys there. He's like one of the first guys to do his camps there. Moves from France to Vegas. Brings his coach. And he's just ready to smash the world. Dude, it's like a movie.
Yeah.
Homeless. Homeless guy. Walks into a gym. 6 years later, UFC.
Hopefully he doesn't
top of the food chain, fight for the title.
Hopefully he doesn't start doing ecstasy and and start going to raves.
Right. I know, right? You got to keep him from getting too crazy. I mean, because, well, first of all, he's got to get past Stipe. And Stipe's going to be the first real wrestler that he's ever faced. That's a big deal. You know, it's whether or not Stipe can take him to the ground. That's a big question. Curtis Blaydes actually a very good wrestler, too.
Stipe is going to try to take him down, you think?
I would imagine there's going to be a lot of everything. I'm going to imagine that fight. You're not going to be able to really dictate entirely where everything takes place.
I don't know too much about Stipe on the ground. He's not usually on the ground, right?
Usually on the ground, but he's a very good wrestler.
Wrestled in college?
Yeah. Yeah. I think he's 20 plus pounds lighter, though. Like, he's about 240.
Does he have submission wins on his record?
It's a good question. I've never seen him win by submission. I've only seen him win by knockout or decision. See if you can go to Stipe's record. Yeah, I mean, he's got to know everything. The question is, does he know, is he strong enough? Is his wrestling good enough to close the distance? What does he got here? Any submissions? TKO, KO, KO, TKO, TKO. It's mostly TKOs and KOs. Dude, he has fucked a lot of people up. One submission by leg kicks, though. That means a guy tapped out from leg kicks.
Stefan Struve beat him?
Whoa. KO'd him. KO'd him.
Whoa.
Yeah, TKO'd him somewhere in Europe, I think it was. Nottingham, England. Hey, ho. Yeah, man. Beat Mark Hunt by TKO, Orlovsky by TKO, Fabricio Werdum by KO, Overeem KO, Junior Dos Santos TKO. That's a fucking hell of a win streak right there, man.
Fuck yeah.
He's no joke, man. The Fabio Maldonado one was scary. Remember that fight? Fabio took that. He was supposed to be fighting someone else. And Fabio took that fight in Brazil as a heavyweight. And
how did it go down? I don't remember.
Smashed him. Stipe was just way too big. Just way too big. Just smashed him. Knocked him out. Same way he knocked. There it is. Boom. That's him and Struve. Or here's him and Maldonado. Yeah, let that go. Stipe right now is in his prime for sure, but this was a good example of that.
No, it's just cutting around.
Oh, it's just a lot of his fights.
Yeah.
He's a tough guy, man. He takes a good shot, and he's a good wrestler. He's strong.
He likes to ground and pound.
Yeah, he's just going to have to figure out a way to deal with the extreme physical advantages that Francis Ngannou has.
When does that fight go down?
That is Boston, January 20th. Oh, shit.
Damn.
Oh, shit. Dum, dum, dum. That's also Volkan Ozdemir and Daniel Cormier are on that card, too. That's interesting. Ozdemir has KO'd two really good guys in a row. Misha Sekernov in one round, and then he just KO'd Jimmy Manoa in one round. That was he hits fucking hard.
Russian?
I don't think so. It says Switzerland. Yeah.
Vulcan.
Sounds like a Vulcan. But that's an interesting fight, too. That's a good fucking card, man. Stipe and Francis Ngannou. So scary.
What's the latest with John Jones?
Ooh, I don't know, man. I don't think they've reached any sort of conclusion. I don't know if they have some sort of an excuse. I don't know when the trial is. I think it's... It's got to be sometime coming up soon, but it hasn't been in the news. See if you can find out when the trial is. It's going to be interesting. See what they say or what they think it could be. Did I tell you the craziest rumor about it?
What?
Talked about it on the podcast before. The craziest rumor was everybody knows John likes to party. I'm not throwing him under the bus. I mean, he's even joked around. He said to DC when DC was talking shit, he's like, I beat you after I did cocaine.
Yeah.
I mean, which was fucking hilarious, but... The craziest rumor was that they cut creatine with cocaine. It's one of the things they cut cocaine with, and that they used some cheap Chinese creatine that was steroid-tainted, which is apparently very common. Apparently, there's a lot of creatines and different things you take. They have trace amounts of steroids that'll show up in a test because the same vats that they make that shit in, they make steroids in, they make everything in. They're making them in China, these really shitty bulk places, and you'll occasionally get tainted supplements. Happens all the time.
Maybe they were purposely tainted.
That could happen, too. We talked about that.
The greatest creatine ever. Like, yeah. Dude, this shit yokes me out.
Yeah, right? Yeah, probably.
Maybe that's just the way to sell steroids. You just sell creatine. But
what's interesting, it says California State Athletic Commission, right? Because it was in California. So who gets to decide? California gets to decide? Is that how it works? Because it's the California State Athletic Commission, so they apparently get to decide what happens in his future.
Arbitration with USADA,
it says. Oh, USADA. If found guilty this time, he faces up to a 4-year ban. Holy shit.
What's the minimum, though?
I don't know. I mean, it really depends on whether or not he's got an actual excuse. If he could get that fucking dealer to get him some coke and it's got the steroids in it. But you never. The problem is, you would only have a decent excuse. You wouldn't be exonerated. There would still be some sort of a penalty.
Wait a minute. Did you say they're cutting in China? They're cutting creatine with coke or with steroids?
They're using creatine to cut cocaine. So if you buy cocaine, say if you got a kilo of cocaine, you want to stretch that shit out, make it a kilo and a quarter. Oh, I got the thing, bro. Super fucking muscle dick creatine. And super muscle dick creatine has some steroids in it. And so when they're cutting this cocaine with this creatine that has steroids in it, he's snorting the coke. This is he, not meaning John Jones, a person. I'm making this up, right? I don't know what the fuck happened. No. This is the rumor.
This could be true.
The rumor is that this has been shown to test positive.
That he did coke and it had creatine in it, and the creatine had steroids in it.
The rumor is that is what people think could be a possibility. Because if John likes to party, and we know John likes to party, it is entirely possible that he might have partied and that he might have just had a little bit of that. And in that was this creatine. Because like if you think about it, they're cutting with all kinds of different stuff, right? They cut it with – I mean, I'm not a cocaine doctor. But I got to imagine they take some white shit that looks like coke and you can make more coke, right? That's what the cutting is, right?
Yeah. But to cut it with creatine.
Apparently it's common. Like, we looked it up. We actually Googled it. Yeah.
Damn. Yeah. I thought you were saying that he was taking creatine and it was tainted with steroids. That's what I thought.
No, but that would be better for him. If that was the case, that would be good. Because that way you could take that creatine to USADA and you'd have to have it on a list of shit you were taking. You say, look, it just says it's creatine. That's all I took. And they tested. They're like, oh, shit, this does have steroids in it. And then they'll go and find another one that's like from the same vat. They can find like the vat numbers, I guess. They'll find one independently, hopefully from a store. And if they test that, if they find a trace amount of steroids in that, then that's what got Dirty Bird, Tim Means. He got off for that. That's how he got off. He didn't take any steroids, just took some fucking over-the-counter normal supplement that wasn't supposed to have steroids in it. And then he tested positive. He was stunned. And if you look at Tim, he even lifts weights. He doesn't remotely look like a guy who uses steroids. And they tested the stuff that they found just randomly in the store, and that tested positive. So he only got a short amount of a suspension. Yeah, it was pretty quick, like 6 months or something like that. Which even then, if you didn't do anything wrong, why would you get 6 months?
And so you're saying that the steroids are in creatine on accident, they're not doing it on purpose, right?
No. Well, here's the thing. This is just speculation. Right. I'm hearing a rumor, right? But the speculation is that these labs where they make creatine, they also make a gang of other things, right? They'll cook up some steroids for you, whatever the fuck the order is, right? And they're not cleaning those vats out right. So if they're just pouring another bag, they pour out the steroids and they pour a bag of creatine in there for the next batch and they're mixing everything up, it's entirely possible that trace amounts of those steroids are getting into that stuff. When we first started doing Alpha Brain, we had some of the early versions tested, and when we got the stuff mixed from a place, the place didn't do a very good job of cleaning out their equipment. We had vitamins in our Alpha Brain that weren't in there. We had some stuff that's not supposed to be in there. So when we tested and we found trace amounts, we had to switch what we were doing. We had to change how we have the things manufactured. That's a super common thing when you're dealing with these overseas laboratories that are making all your shit together. So that's one possibility. Another possibility that I've said before that a lot of people say I'm fucking crazy, somebody could have given him something. Somebody could have given him something to fuck with him. Somebody could have not liked him. Somebody could have done that too. I'm not saying that's what happened, but I'm saying you have to take into consideration all the possibilities. If John is telling the truth and he's totally stunned by this, there's a lot of different possibilities. And one of them could easily be somebody giving it to him. It also could be that he took steroids. That's possible too. I don't know.
If you owned a creatine company, you'd kind of want your creatine to be. Can you? You guys are making steroids there too, right? Okay, cool. Can we use the same vats?
Mix that shit up, kid.
And then you could always just say, hey, you know what? I don't know that.
It's true. Yeah, you know, they do that perfect with those dick pills, apparently. Those gas station dick pills, they have like generic Viagra in them. That's why they work so well.
No, they just use the same vats. Your Honor, we didn't know that they use the same vats.
Yeah, they do that, and they also put steroids in those things, too. Do you know Brian Redband was the first one to call that John Jones had taken dick pills, and that's why he tested positive? Red Band put it together in his head because he does coke. He's like, look, you do coke, your dick doesn't work. Your dick doesn't work, you take those gas station dick pills. You probably took one of those pills. He goes, I take those pills and feel like a fucking animal. He's like, I feel like I've got steroids in me. I'm like, really? He goes, yeah, you get real aggressive. Your dick is hard as a fucking piece of metal. I'm like, okay, all right. Turned out he was right. That's crazy. And it was the same thing with Anderson Silva. When Anderson Silva tested positive, it was from some sort of Chinese dick pill stuff. And they found it and they tested it.
Red Band does coke.
He's done it. He doesn't do it all the time, but he's done it. So he knows what it's like to party. And that's what he was saying. He's like, I know what it's like if you're partying. He's like, your dick doesn't work. He's like, he parties, right? Yeah. Well, he probably did because he tested positive for coke. He's like, he probably does that. Red Band totally nailed it.
Or maybe he was doing ecstasy. People take Viagra on ecstasy, you know?
Yeah. Could be that too.
It happened.
Yeah. Look, he's a wild motherfucker and he likes to party. The question is, did he actually take a steroid with the intention to cheat? That's what we don't know. He says he didn't. I wish there was a way that you 100% could tell if someone was lying. 100%.
You watch that Black Mirror episode where everything's being videotaped with their contact lenses?
Yes.
So they're just like reviewing everything they've said?
Yeah. That freaked me out. That's coming. If we don't have artificial intelligence that takes over the world before then, that's coming. That they're going to be, you're going to be able to record. You're going to have some fucking chip that you put in the back of your head. And it's going to store all the stuff directly from your nervous system. You're going to be able to review it in HD. Mm. Dude, the moment they can give you eyes that work better than your eyes. I mean, you have an artificial disc, right? Think of that. I saw a dude who got attacked by a shark, and he had no arm and no leg. But here he was with a carbon fiber arm and a carbon fiber leg, and he's walking around. If you didn't know, you would never know. Like, from the knee down, he was missing his leg. And from the middle of his like bicep area, he had a fake arm.
He should do MMA, just knock the fuck out of people. He'd probably kill people, just punch holes right through their chest.
You could leg lock them.
Would that be legal? Would the California Athletic Commission let someone fight with a cyborg arm?
No, no chance.
They'd have to start another league with just amputees with cyborg arms.
Well, you remember that dude? Was his name Nick Newell? He used to fight. He had one arm. Remember?
Yeah.
He had like a. He was born with like a stump on one side, and he put a glove on the stump. Yeah, I think that, man, it's entirely possible that in our lifetime they're going to have better parts.
For sure, for sure.
Than what we have.
And once girls start preferring that, like they only date dudes with like cyborg legs, you know what I mean? And they like that machine. Dudes are going to start chopping off their fucking legs.
The first guy that cuts his own eyes out for robot eyes, that's going to be crazy shit. It's going to happen. Yeah, there's Nick. Yeah, there's going to be no chance that anybody's going to want to be normal. Like, yeah, I'd just rather fade away and get fat and
How about you get cyborg legs and you could run like 40 miles an hour?
Yeah, you could jump over buildings.
Yeah, people would chop their fucking legs off for sure.
Ka-chink. Imagine you got some Iron Man legs. Like, literally, you could jump over a building. Like, first of all, just stop and think about living in the year 1500, and someone somehow or another takes you to a place and shows you a Hayabusa motorcycle. He'd be like, what the fuck is that? Oh, this thing? It's just, you lie on that. It goes 0 to 60 in less than 2 seconds. He just fucking, you would never believe that could be real. You could take someone from the 1700s, the 1800s, even the 1900s. Like, maybe the 1900s, they would kind of get it because they had bicycles. But if you go back like 1,000 years ago and show someone a motorcycle, they'd be absolutely convinced there's no way that could exist. It can't be real. It doesn't make any sense. I think if you go 1,000 years from now, it's going to be the same shit with our bodies. We're going to have ridiculous capabilities, and it'll look just like a regular body. There'll be some sort of like bulletproof carbon fiber skin that'll look just like regular skin. You'll be able to jump over the fucking buildings. 100%.
Just iron fists.
Yeah.
Just cut out. I'm just going to lose my hand.
Well, you know what, bro? My hand's been shrinking. I don't know what it is.
You know what I mean? People are just...
Powerful Jamie with the phone on. When's the last time you had your phone on? that's weird. Yeah, there's going to be times where there's no need to, like, oh, you broke your arm. Here's the good news. The recovery time's even less if we give you a fake arm. You'd be like, really? Like, yeah, what do you want? I want to wait 6 weeks while your fucking arm heals? And then your arm can, what, break again? Give you a fake arm. Like, Mom, I don't know what to do. Get a fake arm. I love my fake arms. Everyone's going to be just a robot, like Steve Austin. Remember that? $6 Million
Yep.
Man?
Yep.
Bionic legs.
Remember the Bigfoot episode?
The best episode ever.
TV shows back then were garbage. Oh, my God. Just think about all the TV shows from the 70s. All of them were garbage.
Compare that to, like, a Netflix show. Compare that to, like, Game of Thrones.
Yeah. Or Black Mirror. That's the best. They did have one shitty episode. They were pitching a shutout.
I've only seen three episodes.
The one where, because it's all based on what life is going to be like in 10 years or something.
Right.
Like a little bit in the future, you know?
Yeah.
And that one episode where everyone's just rating each other all the time. You know what I'm talking about?
It's happening now, though.
It's called Nosedive.
What's happening?
It's happening.
I get it, it's happening, but that episode is kind of like. Compared to the other episodes.
Did you see the one with the video game where the guy, they put a little thing in the back of his head?
Yes.
And he doesn't know when the game's on and when it's off?
Yeah.
Fuck.
That was a tough one. How about the one where the dude catches his wife, he figures out that she's cheating on him?
Yeah.
Oh, his acting, whoever that actor is.
Yeah.
His acting, that was an amazing episode, man.
Yeah, they're intense, man. And the writing was so good. Like the dude with the husband. Hold on a second. A social credit app scene in Black Mirror is becoming reality in China. Whoa. Yeah, it makes sense. You're going to have augmented reality and people are going to have like your Facebook score hovering over your head. Like, this is Mike. He's a super swell guy. He's got 4.5 stars from everyone he meets.
Woo! Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that with followers, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, man, it's going to be a weird world when our kids are our age. It's going to be a weird, weird world.
Yes.
I mean, I don't even think we could begin to comprehend it. I think we'd be totally guessing. I think there's some shit that's coming around the corner. Do you see that NASA Tom DeLonge thing? Everybody keeps harassing me about the video of the UFO.
I'm reading they're putting out more videos all day long. Like, not just one.
Mm.
Like,
put
lots
them out.
Of videos.
Let's see him.
Let me see one of them videos. Is Tom DeLonge putting out videos?
No, his organization is putting out videos.
Of UFOs?
Yeah. It's a fighter pilot, an FA-18, I believe, is chasing this thing. And it's showing all the details of, like, the altitude, how fast it's going, what pitch it's at, and all that jazz. I don't know what that means, what pitch it's at. But they're watching this thing. They're trying to figure out what it is. One of the guys is like, it's a drone. It's got to be some kind of a drone. They see something. And it turns. And it was going very fast.
So basically, it's like all the other UFO footage. It's non-conclusive.
Blurry. Yeah, it's blurry. It's in, like, gun sights or, like, you know, some sort of infrared sight, rather. So you're looking at it through this weird infrared video where it doesn't necessarily look, you know, it's weird. You're looking at it, you're like, okay, what am I looking at? I'm looking at a little object.
Do you remember that quote? It could be a total bullshit quote from Wernher von Braun that he said right before he died that beware of the fake alien invasion.
Did he say that?
In so many words.
I hope he did, and he did it just to fuck with people. See,
maybe.
That's it, flying around. There's a whole fleet of them. Look at my ASA.
Oh, my gosh. They're all going against the wind. The wind's 120 knots to the west. Oh, I think, dude.
So they're following it for a while, and then it changes direction.
That's not our LNS, though, is it? It's not.
That is an LNS, dude.
Well, if there's like,
look at that thing.
It's rotating.
So whatever that is, is fucking super interesting. And I heard they're now going to fly Travis Barker to Washington, D.C. to talk to people and give him some information as well. Next, they're going to fly Kanye West. They're going to fly him out and show him the secret lab.
For real?
No.
Oh.
I'm making this up.
Okay.
I just think it's crazy that they're flying Tom DeLonge out. No, it might not be fake. It might be real.
It could be. It looked fake, though.
Here's the thing about aliens, right? How often do you think they'd have to visit? I think they could get it done once in the 70s and be done with us. They'd check us out and they'd be go, look at these crazy assholes. This is what we're going to do. We're going to install some cameras on the moon. These stupid fuckers, they won't even be able to see it. We'll just put some big ass cameras to film them from the distance and let's get out of here. These people are crazy. Like this, they're going to have nuclear power with these assholes, and they just we would never see them again. So, like, if that really is a UFO, if it really is from another planet, rather, how many times do they have to come here? You don't. I mean, if they are real, how much evidence would you really see of them? Would you see it once every 10 years? How often would they come
by? Who had that joke that – was it you maybe? Someone had a joke that like maybe this is like the Tijuana of the universe or something?
Yeah, this is the Tijuana of outer space. They only come down here when they're fucked up and they want to see a show.
Was that part of your
set? Yeah.
That was old.
Yeah, that's super old. That's 2000s, early 2000s. Yeah, I think it's – I'm not a non-believer. That's for fuck sure. I think it's entirely possible. Like if I looked up in the sky and an alien ship flew by, I would never think there's no way that can't be real, it can't be possible. I would think, wow, they visited us. I mean, I'm sure there's something out there that's smart. I'm sure there is. It's a matter of what it would look like, you know? Would it even be in a physical form anymore? I mean, why do we assume that everything has to be in a physical form? What are you looking at? Kendrick Lamar says he saw a UFO, but nobody believes him. What is that thing in his ear, man? What's that thing in his ear?
Like, that's for on stage ear. This is a stage photo.
It's a huge thing in his ear.
In-ear monitors are awesome, but they're also the best headphones you can get.
That is like some fucking Borg shit. It's like he's already been co-opted by technology.
I think Bert has some just for like regular listening. Like 7 different speakers in there.
Really?
They're badass, yeah.
Well, send me a link, son.
Yeah, they mold them to the inside of your ear and everything.
That's another good case for a fucking phone with a headphone jack, huh? Like, that's really annoying to me that they've decided to eliminate the headphone jacks from phones.
Just lost my 2nd pair of AirPods.
You did?
Yeah. Fell out of my pocket.
So what are you talking about? The air
headphone jacks, man. Cell phones now, they don't have a headphone jack anymore. They have this little lightning thing on the iPhones, and the only ones that have headphone jacks are... You can get them off of Samsung has them. The new Google phones, they don't have them anymore either.
So it's all wireless now?
A lot of wireless, yeah. Or you have a dongle that you have to connect at the bottom, and then it connects to an audio thing at the bottom of that.
So basically they're adapters still.
Yeah, there's adapter still, but you don't want to carry a fucking adapter around. You know. But if you want to listen to really good music, I find that it just sounds better when you have a good headphone. It just sounds better. It just doesn't sound as good. I mean, those AirPods are great. They're fine. They're good enough. But if you want to, like, really hear the music, like, the best quality it can be, they say the LG phone is the best for that, the LG V30. It actually has something called a quad DAC, like a little amplifier built into the where the jack is for the audio. So they actually have amplified sound. They said it's supposed to be by far the best sound for a cell phone. Like, they just decided to, like, push that.
Like its own speaker, like you don't need headphones?
No, it's not that you don't need a speaker. You definitely need a speaker. But the headphone jack is like super powered. It's got some processor in there. See that thing?
I'm looking it up and just hearing you describe it, I'm wondering like why, what they could have that's so cool. And then like the article I found on The Verge says it's the best audio in a phone ever. And then quote, like it just doesn't matter. Like they have some crazy thing, and it might be awesome, but it doesn't matter. Yeah.
Yeah, but if it's awesome, if you like sound, like you're a musician, you like sound. Wouldn't that?
I just
like
it in my car. I have my little aux cable.
An aux cable. See, the thing is, if you do an aux cable through the headphone jack with the quad DAC thing, it'd make it sound better in your car.
Do you remember Bass Boost on CD players back in the day?
Yeah.
Like everyone had that. That was the coolest thing. Now it's gone, but it's just built into all the headphones.
Right.
Like Beats. It's kind of just built into it.
Well, do you remember when people's car stereos, like the car stereo you would get, they were always the shittiest fucking sounding things ever, and then you have to buy a stereo afterwards if you wanted something good?
And they added equalizers to them.
Yeah, yeah. And then the car dealerships are like, what are we doing? Why are we letting these people make money off our fucking cars? Because it's like there was a whole industry that was spawned. So they're like, why don't we just put our own good radios in? What the fuck are we doing? So now, like, if you buy, like a new car, like, say, if you buy, like, a Cadillac Escalade or something like that, the sound is insane.
Yeah.
You get in those things, you're like, God, it sounds perfect. It's incredible. Just rings through the cabin, you know? I don't know how we got onto that. Trying to talk about fights. Oh, Holly Holm, Cyborg. What do you think of that shit?
That's going to be insane.
That's really interesting, right?
Holly's probably the only one that has a shot against her. But people forget that Cyborg's a really good striker. Like, people think, oh, Holly is going to outclass her with her boxing skills and her footwork and all that. But Cyborg striking is, she's like a professional Muay Thai fighter.
She is. And now here's another thing to think about. Cyborg's jiu-jitsu. Cyborg is a way better grappler. People forget how good her grappling is because of the fact that she wins so many fights by KO, but she's competed in grappling. I know she was a brown belt just a few years ago. I don't know if she's advanced past that now, but she's legit on the ground. And if you look at what Holly's weakness in the Misha Tate fight, I'm sure she's gotten better since the Misha Tate fight, but Misha controlled her on the ground in one round. I think it was round two. Took her down, controlled her, and then took her down with just a little bit left in the round, in the fifth round, and choked her unconscious. So the ground game, although I'm sure she got better at it, and she's got such a good personality, and she's such a good sport. After that, she showed a picture of her with a white belt on, training. She's like, trying to get better. Like put a picture on Instagram after she got choked out and lost her title.
Yeah.
She's got some serious character.
Yeah. Some strikers, they just don't like training jiu-jitsu. They're just not into it.
Yeah, I don't know if she's into it or not into it, or, you know.
For a while there, people were saying that she just wasn't that into it. And there's, you know, like Rampage was never into training jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
You know, there's just some guys that are so confident on their feet, they think that, why would I ever want to learn this on the stuff on the ground? Let's just keep it up on our feet. She's hard to take down. She works on that for sure.
Yeah.
Holly's hard to take down. And she likes to stand. And I don't think that fight's going to end up on the ground. I don't think Cyborg's going to try to take Holly down. I think Cyborg's going to go right at her.
So that's the same card as Nurmagomedov and Barboza. This is the December 30th card. And then Jimmy Rivera and John Lineker. Woo. That's something that people are sleeping on. That is a good fucking fight.
I don't know too much about Jimmy Rivera.
Dude, he's very good.
Who's he beat?
Very good. He beat Uriah Faber. He was one of Uriah's last fights, the second to last fight. Just click on Jimmy's record. But he's only got one loss in his career. Who's he got? Oh, yeah, he beat Thomas Almeida. He beat up Thomas Almeida. It was a really good fight, too. Before that, Uriah Faber, he beats him. Yuri Alcantara beats him. Pedro Munoz beats him. And he knocked out Marcus Brimage. And I think that was his debut. Is that right? Does it say that?
It's
his full history. Yeah, so he knocked out Marcus in his UFC debut. He's very good, man. Very, very tough. And it's interesting because he comes from a chain, too. He's from Tiger Schulman's. Tiger Schulman's is a really respected name in MMA right now. They're really good, really good, really good trainers, real good fighters coming out of there. But it was always like... Did you have chains out here in the West Coast? Did you guys have like karate chains? Like
not karate one guy, chains.
Tiger Schulman had quite a few gyms.
East Coast.
Yeah, but a lot of gyms, man. I don't know how many he's got now, but I want to say it's definitely more than one. And it was like a known name in the karate world, you know, and then when MMA came around, they adapted. They adapted and they put out some real good fighters. Remember Louis Gaudineau, the kid with the green hair? He fought out of there, too?
I don't remember him.
This is a good fight.
The green hair didn't work.
Well, you know, Carlos Condit's returning against Neil Magny. That's very interesting. But I'll tell you what, man. Neil Magny was the first fight where I realized how goddamn good Rafael Dos Anjos is at welterweight. When Dos Anjos kicked his legs out from under him, got him to the ground and smushed him and submitted him, I was like, holy shit. Some guys, that weight cut is just too much. And Dos Anjos had definitely crossed over into the too much territory. I mean, in my mind, he's one of the best right now, for sure, at 170 pounds. There's so many good matchups at 170, man. So many.
Not too many fighters go up in weight and dominate like that.
Not like that. Not just dominate, but dominate a former world champion who just came off of a convincing victory over Donald Cerrone. You know, Robbie's not shot. By any stretch of the imagination, that's not what it was. This was what was most impressive about it. Robbie was in there to the very end. I mean, he was bobbing and weaving when he was getting hit with those shots. He never gave up. He gave it his all, and he wasn't diminished. He just got out fought. He got out leg kicked. He got out worked. That fucking dude's got some crazy cardio. I mean, Rafael Dos Anjos, for the barrage that he put, see if you can find like some highlights, like Rafael Dos Anjos versus Robbie Lawler highlights. He was just ripping him to the body with ridiculous quantity of strikes.
Carlos Condit hasn't fought in a while, right?
Long time, man.
How long has it been?
Damian Maia choked him out. I think that was his last fight.
A couple years ago?
A couple years ago. Pretty sure.
Did he get hurt and have surgery or something?
I don't know, man. I think he needed a break. Just put it right in the middle there. It's not loading up. God damn it, YouTube. Get your shit together. Anyway, doesn't matter. Just there's a lot of good talent in that 170-pound division now. It's very interesting. Darren Till, I want to see him get a second fight in the UFC. After that Cowboy fight, I was hoping that he was going to fight Wonderboy Thompson, but Wonderboy apparently fucked his hands up in that Jorge Masvidal fight. He hurt his thumbs. So he's got to rest up, maybe get surgery. I don't know. What's going on here? Darren Till won't rule out fight with Mike Perry, but has Wonderboy as main priority. Well, Mike Perry just lost in a great fight, but Ponzinibbio fought a brilliant fight against Perry. Perry's a fucking animal, though, man. That guy never stops coming. Did you see that fight?
I did, but I didn't see it consistently. I was, like, just looking over at it.
It's a good fight.
Mike Perry, he's the guy who fought Allen, right? Jobon?
Yeah. Jobon was the first guy to beat him. Jobon beat him by decision.
And then he's been on a win streak since.
Well,
then
he lost this fight. And I think he would he. I feel like he won one in between there. The Jake Ellenberger fight was after Alan Jobon, wasn't it?
I don't remember.
He's dangerous, very dangerous. If he catches anybody, he knocks him out. I mean, he just got to catch you clean. If he catches you clean, he throws fucking haymakers. Super aggressive guy, like all dudes with writing above their eyebrows. Whenever you get tattooed above your eyebrow. Usually probably a little reckless. Probably a little crazy. Yeah. So we'll see here. Yeah, the Jake Ellenberger KO was right after Alan Jobon. That was crazy. The Alex Reyes
look at
KO.
That win streak he had before Alan.
Yep. Hyungoo Lin, who's a bad motherfucker, he got him by TKO. Danny Roberts got him by KO. Serious fucking striker, man. That guy throws bombs. I mean, he lost to a really good guy. Ponzinibbio was fucking very good, and he put that guy in trouble. But Ponzinibbio had an awesome strategy, great workload, great cardio. There was a fight where like both those guys were like on the edge a lot. They were both very tired. It was like some serious back and forth action.
What do you think's what's happening next for Rose Namajunas?
That's a good question. She's probably
rematch?
Still on cloud nine, man.
Rematch with
maybe, but here's
Johanna?
The thing. I don't know if Joanna can make that weight. I think Joanna is struggling real bad to make that
is
weight.
Is that what she said when she lost?
No, I mean, she gave it all up to Rose. I mean, Rose caught her, but she said she had a real struggle to make that weight. She's thinking maybe 125 would be better for her. Who knows? She fired her nutrition company, though, that was taking care of her.
Damn.
The people that were getting her to cut weight for that. She said it was her hardest weight cut.
Hmm.
When it comes to people that know how to do that, boy, there's like four or five different people right now that are like prominent people.
Who's the best at cutting weight?
You hear two guys consistently. You hear Dolce and Lockhart. That's who you hear consistently. You hear Mike Dolce and George Lockhart. Dolce's got a little bit more experience.
Who's Dolce got right now?
That's a good question. He's got a lot of people. But he's got a real good record. You know, you look at his record for getting guys on weight for fights. He's got a real good record, you know?
Who has the worst record?
Whoever Kelvin had.
This guy again?
Kelvin's lost. How many times has Kelvin missed? He's missed weight.
Twice.
Yeah. But did he make it when he was with Dolce? He made it when he was at Dolce, though, right?
I think so.
Yeah. Just needs to be super regimented, you know?
Yeah.
He's so fucking talented. Kelvin is so goddamn talented.
Hell yeah, he is.
That 1-2 that he landed on Bisping was like, holy shit.
Didn't he catch him with the left hook?
Yeah, well, he caught him with a right jab, and then he caught him with a straight left.
Oh, that's
just
right. That's
snapped
right.
His head back. It was like, but it was, he snaps his punches, man.
He throws
down.
The end
of those punches, they're snap. Like, he's got a very interesting punching style. Like, he catches guys, like, at the very end of his shots, man. I mean, it's really interesting, too, coming from that southpaw position. bang, look at that. Come on, man.
Powerful.
Fucking super powerful. And a good wrestler, too. That's what a lot of people forget. One of the reasons why he can strike so good is he's so fucking hard to take down. Remember when he won against Uriah Hall?
Yeah, he's been working with Marvin, my black belt, Marvin Castell. Mm-hmm. He's been doing some serious training with him.
De Cerebrus?
Yeah, De Cerebus.
De Cerebus? he's a bad motherfucker.
I'm surprised you remember that.
Oh, I know who that guy is. He's got a nasty M&R role.
Well, he's got that, like, 12 million views or whatever on Flow Grappling.
Yeah.
He's a bad motherfucker. He does that all the time. Marvin is probably at headquarters the hardest trainer. I mean, he's always drilling, always teaching privates, drilling his boys. He's got his own crew, the Break Squad. It's like him and about seven guys. And, man, they're nice. Training on Sundays, doing doubles on Sundays. Every day.
That's amazing.
He lives it, like,
that's
for real.
That's
for real. And he's hustling, too, putting out seminars, training camps. He's got his dark arts seminars. When he teaches a class, it's dark arts. Just because he's, he's got all kind of game. But he does specialize in his own, he's got his own little special leg lock game that no one else is doing. It's pretty extraordinary.
Mm.
And he's the best at it. And he's teaching, he's got all his crew that he's teaching. And I've actually implemented that into the curriculum. We practice his best stuff. I put it right in directly.
Isn't it crazy how jiu-jitsu has no end? There's like new waves and new techniques and new variations and new improvements and new defenses. And it has no end.
The amount of ways you can intertwine and entangle two human beings and in different angles, it really is endless.
Yeah.
There's so many different styles of just leg locks. Just leg locks alone take a lifetime to master. It's so much. And over the last 4 years, it's just exploded. I mean, since EBI won, when the Danaher Death Squad came in and just started dominating, boom, that's when the leg lock game just exploded. It was always around because Abu Dhabi, Dean Lister was crushing people with heel hooks, and so was Vinnie Magalhães. They've always been around, but I think maybe people thought, okay, Dean Lister is leg locking dudes because he's so strong and so big. And Paul Harris is leg locking everybody because he's so big and strong, just ripping legs apart. I think people looked at that like maybe it's on a small man sport, leg locks. And even early in MMA, like big dudes are going for heel hooks, outside heel hook. But then you see guys like Eddie Cummings, and, he's not big at all. He cuts down to 135. He's the 145 champ, but
what does he walk around?
He leg locks dudes that are 250 pounds. He'll leg lock anybody.
That's crazy. Doesn't,
people are afraid of him. They're afraid of him. He's so good at leg locks. People are fucking, run from him.
Well, they have such a good system. The Danaher system. Do you know Danaher system? Do you talk to him about it?
He's very secretive about it, and that's a good move. That's part of the reason they're dominating the sub-only scene. They're very secretive, but we take what they do and we add it to the game, and we dissect their game. We dissect Marcelo Garcia's game. We dissect anybody's game who's legit.
Donaher's got a great Instagram page too, breaking down stuff, down his techniques.
He's a genius.
Yeah.
I mean, look at all his guys. You got Eddie Cummings, Gordon Ryan,
Nicky Ryan,
Gary Tone, and Nicky Ryan, and then the guys from TriStar, which are affiliated with them too, like Ethan Krellenstein. I always mess up
GSP.
His name.
GSP did a lot of training with them.
Yep. And Oliver Taza, he's awesome. They got a lot. Their crew, they're deep, and they're not just good at leg locks. They're good at everything. They're good at passing. They're passing people's guards in Abu Dhabi.
Well, look at when George choked out Bisping. I mean, when was the last time you saw a rear naked choke that tight?
Yeah.
That was tight
right
away in a world title fight. The way he slapped it on, it was like, sometimes you'll see like a lot of like hand to the back of the head type shit. Mm-hmm. That was just super sunk in and tight.
Yeah. Our rivalry with them, 10th Planet and DDS, is only it's only because they're so goddamn good,
Of course.
And we're trying to catch them. Right now, in the sub-only game, no doubt, they are the best, and we're trying to catch them. So if we catch them or not, you know, if we surpass them or not, it regardless, we're going to be as good as we can get. We're getting better and better.
And what's important every year is you need someone like that.
Yeah.
Like the sport needs someone like that. To have a team that's that dominant, it's great for the whole game, because then you realize, like, wow, this is possible, and you got to take it to the next level.
Yeah, they're elevating everybody's game. Yeah. And when Gio beat Eddie Cummings, it was so huge for me and for everybody at Temple. It was so huge only because they were so dominant.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, that it was just incredible. So the rivalry we got going is just making us all better, and it's just elevating the game. It's making us better. It's making our leg locks better, and we're even taking, you know, some of their passing and their back attacks too. So
who is out of jiu-jitsu, out of high-level jiu-jitsu, has got like a real promise in MMA right now? Because isn't Gary Tonin about to fight an MMA match?
Gary Tonin, who won EBI 4 times, I think, which is a lot. And he only has 1 loss in EBI. He's been super dominant. He's about to fight for 1FC. He signed a contract with Shatri. So that's going down. I think his first fight may be in March, maybe.
Whoa.
And, you know, as long as they bring him along slowly, no doubt he's going to make some noise.
And I mean, Krohn is still fighting for Ryzen, right? Isn't he fighting for Ryzen?
He fought for Ryzen in his last fight, but I don't know what's going on currently with his contract. I have no idea. It's been a while. It's been over a year maybe since his last fight, so I don't know. And when he was on my podcast, he made it clear that he at the very least wasn't certain where he was going to go with MMA.
Mm.
He talked about how the training and the lifestyle is just not fun. He goes, I just beat a guy, and I'm like, this wasn't fun. I mean, so he's not, maybe he needs time off, you know, because he's had all the pressure of being Hickson's son, and there's so much pressure that comes. Can you imagine the pressure?
Yeah.
You know, he's fighting an ADCC, you know, all that pressure. He cannot get stomped. If he gets stomped, he's got to deal with, like, how his dad feels, and, you know, that fucks with people's heads. So there's so much pressure.
I just want to see that kind of level of jiu-jitsu. Yeah. Like when Brian Ortega fought Cub Swanson.
Yes, that guy right there. Brian Ortega, that guy, he's right up there with all the best jiu-jitsu players in the UFC right now.
He's
right up there with Damian Maia right there. I mean, that guy is finishing fights with jiu-jitsu consistently. And he just took, you know, what he did in his last fight with against Cub Swanson, when he just took just your basic ass front headlock, head and arm, he just takes that and just closes the show with that. Not very many people can do that.
And adjusted his hands.
Yeah.
He was hanging on.
He had an arm in, faked like he was going all neck Marcellitine, and then went back. Because as he faked, it loosened up the guillotine. So he went back, boom, and then it was just a little fake.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, he faked and went back into it.
Because the guy on the bottom, he knows he's caught an arm in guillotine. And he knows, okay, I'm safe here. But look, there's a little opening. If he switches really quick, there's a Marcellitine there. So you're always watching it. So when he went, he adjusted, but he went back and got in deeper with the arm. And that's what I haven't talked to him personally about it, but to me, that's what it looked like. I watched it over and over. That looked like a little fake. He had head and arm, faked the Marcellitine, and went back in and deep, and then he sunk it in.
That makes sense.
The level of squeeze and clinch that's needed to pull that off on Cub Swanson is high-level jiu-jitsu. He's one of the best jiu-jitsu guys in the UFC. He's right up there. His jiu-jitsu is really, really good. Really good. And to pull that guillotine off on him and standing, there's so much technique going on.
And when he almost got that Darce, was it a Darce or an Anaconda? Was it a Japanese necktie? What did he almost get in the first round?
I'd have to see that again.
He was in some weird position where it looked like he was trying to seal up a Darce, but either way, I think it was a Darce. He had Cub Swanson tightened down quick, and you're like, woo, this guy's closing the show fast.
Those are all very simple chokes to learn, the Darce, the arm and guillotine, the Marcellitine, the Japanese necktie. That's the easiest part of the technique, is just learning how to do it. That's the easiest part. The hard part is mastering it.
Yeah.
That's the hard part. Easy. You could learn an arm and guillotine in 3 minutes. Anybody can. It's really easy to learn. It's not trigonometry. But mastering it, that's what's hard. Like, you would think, like, why isn't there more guys like Brian Ortega out there just taking little simple front headlocks with head and arm and then taking it home? There ain't that many, because the amount of, it's just like a Muay Thai plum clinch. You know, so easy. You could learn a Muay Thai plum clinch in 30 seconds. Really, really easy. But actually manhandling a professional fighter with it, the amount of time that you need to craft that clinch and polish it, there's so, you actually need physical time. You have to, it's not going to happen on its own.
Remember when Anderson grabbed Rich Franklin? You could see right away, you're like, whoa, this is a different kind of tie clinch. Remember? He just started moving him around.
Every now and then you see a fighter utilize just a plum clinch and be really effective with it. Someone recently, I forgot who was using it in the UFC last week. I forget, but who was it?
Wasn't Dos Anjos, was it?
Yes, it was Dos Anjos. That's right. Yeah. It was him. And he comes from, you know, Rafael Cordero. Yeah, who's like, that's Muay Thai.
Right.
How much time are you spending developing that plum clinch, that Muay Thai clinch? If that is not in your curriculum, that is not going to be something that people are going to be fearing. You actually have to put time into it. It isn't about learning it. It's about mastering it. So,
what's about developing strength in that one particular
clinch
move? Just like the same way, like, some guys can throw a nasty left hook to the body because they just have ridiculous power. Or is, you take the average athlete and have him throw a left hook, it's like an awkward punch to throw. But you get a guy like Triple G, he's been doing it so long, that neural pathway is so smooth and carved. He just whip, he just digs that thing. It's the same thing with chokes. You see it with Brian.
Same thing.
Same thing with Brian also with his triangles, man.
Yes.
His fucking guard is, you
need
vicious.
That needs special time too. Yep. It has nothing to do with the time you spent on the front headlock and taking that all the way home and closing the show just from the front headlock. Now, Cobrina did it against AJ Agazarm in Abu Dhabi. AJ wrestled in college. Cobrina didn't wrestle, but at this point, he is like a college wrestler. Cobrina's been wrestling so long, he could wrestle with college wrestlers.
Yeah, for sure.
AJ wasn't going to take him down. And AJ's a college wrestler, like legit. And he's not going to take Cobrina down. Cobrina's like, you know, capoeira master. So Cobrina shot in on AJ and got a single.
Wow.
And then dragged him in, but he had a single. AJ was hopping on one foot, and then he would drag him down, like run the pipe with it. And AJ is such a professional. He gets put to the ground, but then pops right back up. Now he's hopping on one leg again. He has a single. And then Cobrina does it again. Boom, he drags him down. And then AJ, like a professional ninja, he pops up again.
How the fuck is AJ even walking after that Gary Tonin bout?
I don't know, but let me finish this real quick. This is on that front headlock. So then Cobrina, he realizes, okay, he sees what's going on. He knows that he still has the single, still has control. That clinch Cobrina has, he captured him. It's not just a regular thing. He captured him. AJ can't pull that leg out. He can't complete the takedown, but he ain't pulling the leg out. That clinch, Cobrina's so strong, right? So then Cobrina does it again. He drags him down to the ground, and then before he could pop up, he lets go and jumps on a front headlock, and then he has a cradle and a front headlock, and then boom, and that's it. He's not letting go of that. There's really not that much there, but you know what? It's a starting point. The actual real starting point was that single, that clinch on the single.
Did he submit him?
He captured him. Yeah. He got his back. He slowly had the front headlock with the cradle, and then he sprawled on him for a while, maybe a couple minutes, and then slowly jumped on his back. He took him out like a real anaconda.
It's interesting.
And that, all those positions, every step, just a little single, holding a leg on a single. Most people can't even hold it, and a guy will limp leg out and start again. They start fresh and reset. Most guys can get in there and hold that single for just a little bit. It's only a little clinch, little tiny clinches, a little second here, 2 seconds here of the wrist, little wrist control. But when Cobrina gets in there and clinches on that leg, he couldn't pull it out, and then he jumped on the front headlock, and then he wasn't going to. A lot of dudes, you put a front headlock on, most guys, you could peel that shit off and get off my fucking neck easily. But there's levels. Like we always say, we always say that because that's what it's all about. You have to remind people there's levels to every movement.
And you just keep getting better.
And then levels to chaining the movements. That's different. You know, and then boom, you put another movement. Well, what level are you on this part that we're going to connect? That's a whole different level.
Mm.
That's a whole different part, another piece. Everything needs to be, every pathway in jiu-jitsu, they could be super long or short, but man, there's some pathways that, like, for instance, you can... capture someone in quarter guard. That's your first one. Like, this is a path, a normal path. All I'm trying to do is just capture the guy. And the worst capture is quarter guard. That's the worst guard ever, because anything worse than quarter guard, where you're just controlling his ankle. There's half guard, you control the leg. Full guard, you're controlling his whole body is between your legs. That's full guard. Half of that is you only have control of one of his legs. And then quarter guard is you're almost losing that leg. You got the ankle. That's the worst guard. Once you lose control of that, he passes your guard. Or you have nothing. You have nothing. So you would capture that ankle. You're in quarter guard. And then use a mini stomp. That's a technique, a series of techniques to get to the lockdown, which is a form of half guard. And then from the lockdown, how are we going to get to full guard? So it's just a little climb, ankle, full leg. Now I got your full body. Now we're going to attack. And then from there, it's a whole new sport starts. You got him in full guard. Now it's all, what you did before has nothing to do with this. It's a whole new level. It's like a video game. Now I got him in full guard. Man, that took a while, but I finally got him here. And that's the whole strategy and the whole plan. If anything would have failed and I didn't get full guard, then you try to sweep and try to get on top. I'm on the bottom. Use half guard sweeps. Get the dogfight. Electric chair. Electric stone. Reverse lockdown. A lot of stuff you could do. Butterfly sweeps. Overhook. Boom. I couldn't get full guard, but look, I swept you. Now I'm on top. Now we pass the guard. Set him up. Put him in the truck. From the truck, it's not working out. Take
people,
us back from the truck.
A lot of people don't know what you're talking about. I know. Here, though, I know. The truck. I know. What you're trying to say is there's a crazy
there's a
comprehensive
path.
System.
Yeah, there's a path. There's all these steps.
Yeah.
Nothing's happened in the truck. Take the back. I'm not going to spend that much time on the back. I'm going to spiderweb. Spiderweb, that's it. We're first and goal on the one. It's not looking good for you. And there were so many things that you had to chain together for that to happen. All those moves that sound crazy, you got to chain all those moves together to make it happen. You know, that takes a long time.
They should teach that shit in high school. They really should.
What, jiu-jitsu?
They make kids a lot nicer.
I believe so.
I think so.
Makes them a lot more humble, for
more,
sure.
More humble, but also more realizing that a lot of the bullshit and the insecurity, you can get that out of your system.
Yeah.
Train, yeah. You know?
Yeah. A lot of pressure, though.
A lot of pressure. But
a lot of pressure.
Everybody would be cooler with each other.
Because with jiu-jitsu, it's competition every night. That's a different kind of pressure. So if you can handle that, if your ego can handle the competition every night, it's Abu Dhabi every night. If you can handle it and you go in there like, I don't care if I get beat by these guys. I care about the guys that are on the streets. These guys in this jiu-jitsu club, they're all little computer nerds. I'm not worried about them.
And they're going to be nice to you.
I don't care if they tap me out. One day I'm going to be able to do that. Do what they did to me on someone that just walked in the door. That's the attitude you need. You need that attitude. Like, people take the tapping when they go into jiu-jitsu too seriously. And there is that. That's why it's so much fun. That's why it's exhilarating and exciting.
Because they don't want you to do it.
Yeah, exactly. And then when you tap someone out, it makes it so much better. The fear of getting tapped or whatever, maybe you don't call it fear, but I guess you could. But that in itself makes the tap feel better, so it's worth it. You got to have both. Can't have heaven without the hell. So that's what makes it exciting.
That's life itself, though. It's like a microcosm.
Yeah, exactly. It's like all the shit that's going on in the world. It's like, maybe this is, we're here for the pain. Maybe it's supposed to be fucked up, and we're supposed to learn how to survive in this fucked up world, you know?
I don't know if we're supposed to, but we definitely appreciate good things more when we see bad things.
Yes. Maybe we, like...
Struggle. Struggle's real.
Yeah, when you think about, getting, let's just say you were a politician or something, or a person that were like a truther or whatever, and then you're thinking about, man, what if I get suicided, you know?
Do you really think like that?
No, I'm not, and I'm just saying.
But you've brought that up many times about like Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
Like, do you mind how many people criticize Hillary Clinton? Unless you're working for the DNC, you don't have to worry. But if you're sending some shit to WikiLeaks,
people get suicided.
They just
vanish.
But
what's
how about
worse?
That dude that just vanished?
What's people fight that? People are fighting the extreme corruption going on, and there's so many layers. But what's worse, getting suicided by somebody in the DNC, someone ordered a suicide hit on you, or getting eaten by a great white shark in South Africa? Like what? Well, how would you rather go?
Damn.
Does it really matter?
Doesn't
you know,
matter.
It
the
doesn't
shark
matter.
Might suck because it might cut you in half.
Yeah, but you're not. There's not people out there. You're not going out there fighting to kill all sharks. You know,
right.
You're not trying to end sharks. You know, so maybe we're supposed to be in all this shit, and we're supposed to try to figure it out.
You know, maybe the bad motivates the good. You know, I honestly believe that there's got to be some opposing forces in this world for things to get done. It's not that I necessarily want to see evil, but I think there's definitely some sort of an equation going on. There's good and bad.
Look at movies. Movies always have to have some kind of conflict.
Yeah, you always.
Know, always. Otherwise, you're not going to watch it. It's almost like that's how this all works, is there's going to be evil motherfuckers here and there's going to be good people. Like, what side do you want to play? And maybe you're not supposed to try to fight the evil, just try to survive around it, you know?
I got to pee so bad. We have to end this. tell me when again is the next EBI so people can get it on. It's on UFC Fight Pass now.
Yep. UFC Fight Pass. The next, you could watch the last, you know, EBI 1 through 14 on UFC Fight Pass. The next one, EBI 15, the featherweights, February 17th at the Muscle Farm headquarters here in Burbank. Eddie Cummings, Gio Martinez, and also the combat jiu-jitsu, the EBI combat jiu-jitsu bantamweight title fight between Nick Holstein, who's the current champion, and Ben Eddy, the Hindulo team master.
The next fight companion we're going to do is the 14th of January, it looks like. That looks like the move. 14th of January, unless another one comes up in between now and then. Is there any other one? But that's a good one, right?
Yeah, I think it's just the one on the 30th is the next fight. So.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you, Eddie Bravo. Thank you, Young Jamie.
How long do we go?